space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, it's like 750,000 degrees below zero here in the Mad Science Lab, duct tape and bailing wire. Woo! We're getting better, though, I'll tell you that. You know, that whole entire global warming thing that you always hear me hollering about is kind of ridiculous in this, man. And you're always going to hear me hollering about it, especially when it's as cold as it is right now. You know, if you go over there to Shaziz Mad Science YouTube channel, you'll see it says Shaziz Mad Science Channel, the home of high voltage. That's the reason why I keep on talking about voltage and pressure and high voltage and stuff like that. I threw a little message down there in the chat that I googled up, the nature of electricity, and it says, and I quote, nature of electricity, lightning is a natural weather phenomenon that, I even said that right, I think, phenomenon. Anyway, lightning is a natural weather phenomenon that occurs around the world every day. It happens when the electrical charges in the clouds separate and the needs to find each other again to neutralize. The electricity produced by lightning can contain intense voltage and heat. Heat, man! Something I need right now. All those people out there talking about climate change. See, first it was global warming, then it was climate disruption, and then it was climate change or whatever. Whatever's going to be next week when the math don't add up. These idiots out there that try to be these couch potato science folks that sit there and tell you about how the planet's heating up and you're all going to burn and your hair's going to be smoldering like something out of the bonfire pit in the early in the morning when you woke up and you're all hungover and looking at the smoke in your eye. Yeah, that's what your hair is going to look like with global warming. No, I'm serious, man. This global warming ridiculousness. There's so much ice outside. First the doggone snow came in and tore down a bunch of trees, and now it's ice out there tearing down a bunch of trees. And that's why they don't call it global warming anymore. They don't want to call it global warming when you're freezing to death. I mean, because it just doesn't sound right. So you got to call it climate change, right? Well, nature climate's been changing since the dawn of time. So, you know, one day it's raining outside, next day it's hotter than heck or whatever, you know. And depending on where you live, you know, and the whole globe thing. I did a video years ago called Earth Tilted. That's back before the whole flat earth deal right there. And I ain't flat earther, so don't get me wrong. I'm just saying. But if it is flat, then that means the earth probably didn't tilt. And my video might be all wrong. But in that video, I show you, you know, you shine a light on this basketball. And whenever you tilt that ball in certain directions, it changes the weather pattern from top to bottom because you're not facing the sun anymore. So, you know, it could have something to do with that, right? That's what science said. Science said the doggone Earth was a globe. So if it's a globe, then the Earth must have tilted because it changed the weather pattern. All kinds of craziness. You know, that's not a man-made episode, obviously. There ain't nobody big enough to change the Earth tilt or whatever. So we had to figure out what that's going on, but that's, you know, that's science. Test it, repeat it, and all that kind of jazz. But anyway, getting back to the subject at hand, the doggone global warming people just keep on and keep on. They just won't shut up about it or anything like that, and it gets nutty after a while. Sometimes it's painful to listen to, especially when somebody's sitting there trying to tell you the physics of why global warming is causing the planet to heat up and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, what? That ain't what the science book said. Well, at least what it used to say. It used to be a real science book. Now it's a comic book. It's something out of some sort of George Orwell's 1984. I bet that was in there. I bet you could go find global warming in George Orwell's book. I bet you could. Anyway, doesn't matter if you can or you can't. Fact is, it's ridiculousness. Because I'm sitting here right now, I got my leather gloves on with my jerseys underneath that, and I got my hat and my blanket and my pillow, and I'm all sitting here trying to stay warm waiting for these PCs to put some heat into the room to add to the space heater on the other side. Now, so I'm going to have to figure out something here. You know, nature, we're going to have to figure out how to mimic nature because nature is the best teacher of all. I mean, if you want to see what hot is, go look at a volcano or stand out in the middle of the sun in the middle of the desert somewhere or somewhere where there ain't no shade. Nature has a plan. Nature's always had a plan. Nature is the best of the best. It's just incredible what nature is. So if we actually learn a little bit from watching nature, when we start mimicking nature when we want to be warm, we know we could go stand in the sun. That's blatantly obvious. I mean, anybody with any common sense would get out from underneath the shade tree if they were cold and go stand in the sun. But in modern day science is just, I don't know, man. They're just kind of ridiculous. Actually, they've done past ridiculous. They've made it to ludicrous. Anyway, you got these congressmen and senators out there talking about carbon taxes and getting everybody out of planes, trains, and automobiles, and we're all going to have public transportation, and only those who need a vehicle, who are pertinent to making sure everything runs, or will be allowed to have a vehicle. Are you kidding me? Anybody out there want to give up their car? What about your doggone plane ticket? You want to just shred that up right now because you're not going to be able to use that? It's some of these idiots that they call liberals out here in the government actually get what they want. You ain't going nowhere. You're staying home. Matter of fact, you're going to have a new home. You're going to be shoved up in some compact stack and pack housing inside the middle of the city, and you're not even going to know what nature looks like. By the time you grow old and your grandchildren grow up, they're not even going to know what the jungle was. They're not going to know what the countryside looked like. All they're going to know is what they're told, flat out. There's some more George Orwells for you. I don't know what gets into these people, but you wonder why I call it mad science. That's exactly why I call it mad science, because after years and years of hard study and all the craziness that I had to tolerate in school just from the shenanigans of other students that didn't want to go there to study, just want to go monkeying around, I'm trying to learn the book and get the best education I can while I got a bunch of fools acting like a bunch of yahoos. Anyway, so I managed to get my education. I worked hard, I studied, I got really good grades in school, and I learned everything I could about science, because I loved science, you know? And I look out there in this world, I don't see no real scientist anymore. You know, science used to be about testing and experiments, and try it before you deny it, and checking out what nature does, and learning, and growing, and just making amazing things happen. But it doesn't happen like that anymore. The mainstream scientists out there have turned into flat-out cowards. They're intellectually dishonest, all right? And then you can bring any one of them to the table if you like, and no crazy-haired shiziz be more than happy to have a debate with them and all that kind of stuff. Of course, they're not going to like my terminology because nobody does. Most of the folks I talk to end up getting mad because I tell them things like, I don't care about current watts and amps, and they blow their stack and shred a friendship and all that kind of craziness. But I don't care about current watts and amps because I'm trying to show people how to use energy in a completely and different fashion the way that nature had intended on it. See, Anon8749 just said, science uses used to be honorable. You're right. Science used to be honorable. Now it's a bunch of like, government going to give me money. All I got to do is say I agree with this, and that's that. But the whole thing about it is, if you think about what's going on out there, you think about what the doggone government tells you all the time about climate change and global warming, climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up, it's all pure ridiculousness because you're supposed to lead by example. Well, they're still flying around in corporate jets and limousines and everything on your dime. That's all right, you know. You know, a little bit of carbon ain't going to kill us, right? And they, even the ones out there promoting it, I bet everybody's ever been to one of these doggone rallies, didn't ride a bicycle or a skateboard or a rickshaw or some sort of scooter to get there. I bet they got in a car, maybe an SUV, possibly a bus. They could have gotten to a limousine, you know, like Al Gore. He bought him a house right there on the seashore right after he told everybody the sea levels were going to rise. And we're all going to flood out and all that kind of stuff because the ice caps are going to melt and the polar bears are going to drown and all this craziness. Yeah, so he buys him a 9-bedroom mansion, all right? Got 9 bedrooms in this mansion. It's probably got 10 bathrooms or something like that. All kinds of... I wonder how much the electric bill is there. I bet the carbon footprint on that one's pretty steep. Is he going to pay carbon taxes for having a big house? Well, I don't think so, because he done said his ocean level's going to rise, and that was so many years ago, and it's still... Matter of fact, some people are saying the ocean's receding. Anyway, so that's kind of ridiculousness we got to go through. But these folks keep talking about crazy stuff like, you know, we got to get everybody out of cars and all into electric cars. Now, I would love to see all electric cars. That would be a good thing. But if you understand real science, then you understand that carbon isn't a problem. I mean, we're living in a carbon-based world, and everything around you is pure energy. And everybody who's out there trying to debunk the so-called free energy thing, they're a bunch of fools because they didn't pay attention in science class. I mean, let me read this one more time. Nature of electricity. Lightning is a natural weather phenomenon that occurs around the world every day. It happens when electrical charges and clouds separate and need to find each other again to neutralize. Nature always balances itself out. I just added that one. The electricity produced by lightning can contain intense voltage and heat. Electricity! Imagine that, right out of the sky. And that don't even get into the thermoelectrics, the hydroelectrics, the wind power, the solar power. You know, there's so many volcanoes on this planet. If you want to talk about steam power, shoot, you could tap into those puppies and drain off some of that energy or whatever. But then they'd probably say, oh, well, you know, if you do that, then the volcano's going to get cold and turn into a mountain. All right. Well, if that's what you think, well, that, I guess that'd be all right, because then we could, like, go mountain climbing and stuff without having to worry about the fireballs and the fire pits and the lava frying our faces off, you know, cooking our biscuits, or even frying our shoes right off the off our feet or whatever. So anyway, you know, That would be a terrible thing, I guess, if the volcanoes, if you used up all the energy from those. And what about the seashore slapping in and up and down a wave? Every time it does that, it takes off a bunch of land and some dirt, and maybe even you if you're standing there in the wrong time of day during a, you know, some sort of tide or whatever is going to suck you out to sea. And then you get all the way out there and you got to have enough energy to swim back, and hopefully somebody going to come along and pick you up, because chances are you're probably going to poop out before you get there. So it'd be nice to have a boat with a motor on it, you know, or even a solar powered boat, you know, a wind powered boat. Think about that. They went around in boats for years without no electricity. They managed to get across the seven seas and all that kind of stuff. So you still wonder why I call it mad science? You're standing on a planet supposedly with 3/4 covered in water, and somebody on this planet can't get nothing to drink. Really? Come on. Better get your act together. If you're standing next to the ocean dying of thirst, you didn't pay attention in science class. I'm here to educate you. There's this thing called desalinization. You can actually do it on the cheap, you know, with a couple bottles and using temperature differences and stuff. You can boil the water on one side and cool it down on the other side. It leaves all the heavies and the salt behind, and now you've got fresh water. Go ask those people over there in Dubai. They did a real good job of it. Built huge desalination plants. Anyway, so they're still all talking about how you ain't going to have no car and everything's got to be zero emissions and all this. And you're going to have your house completely off the power grid because we can't have no coal-fired power plants or nuclear power plants or any other kind of power plant. What are they going to do about your gas generator? You're going to have to turn that into to your local law enforcement man. And then I wonder what the law enforcement man's going to do. Is he going to get to keep his car, his police car? Or maybe he's just going to have to get a ricochet and have some of his lower ranked officers pull him around in it, and one of them hang off the side of the ricochet and go, wee-you, 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 and then chase down the bad guy who's still got his Mustang GT, you know? I don't see it happening. honestly. But we don't got to go back in time to do that. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. All we got to do is learn how to mimic nature, what nature does. Now, I got a video out there called Neodymium Magnet Accelerator. It's in the works right now. Wait till you see what's going to go on with that thing right there. But it mimics nature. See, what they tell us about electricity and how electricity actually works, inducing a current and the connection between magnetism and electricity, you know, and they're even talking about mimicking, making synthetic magnetic fields now. They're actually talking about custom printing magnets to make them either stronger or monopoled or all that. One of these days, science or technology will bypass science altogether. And the technology will be right there in your hand. It's just right here and now, kind of like when I was explaining how I'm sitting here with my gloves on and I got a hat on, I'm freezing, I'm like frozen, and I'm like stuck to the chair because I got snot sickles and everything because of global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math doesn't add up once again. You know, this ridiculousness that we have to tolerate out there, we the taxpayers, man, we're getting took. It's as simple as that. People want to sit there and tell you one thing when you go to science class in school, and then years later, they're teaching the kids something completely opposite of that. Doesn't even have anything to do with real science anymore. So I'm going to take a breather on the breath thing, and I'm going to play a couple little podcasts here, different types of magnets. This first guy is testing different types of materials for magnetism. So I'm going to play this real quick for you.
Hi, which element is attracted the most to a magnet? Is it a clear winner? Or is there any competition for it? I will test the best candidates at room temperature and an outsider just below that temperature in 4 different experiments. Going into this, I thought there would be a clear winner, but I was surprised by the results. Maybe you will be too. Strong magnets will bite you at any given chance. Do be careful with them. And wear safety glasses when using them. You'll see why later. Nickel and cobalt can cause skin problems, so don't wear them as jewelry. Overall, there are three ways a material can react to a magnet. Diamagnetic materials are weakly repelled by a magnet. Materials that are paramagnetic are weakly attracted to a magnet, but can't be magnets in themselves. And then there are the ferromagnetic materials, which are strongly attracted to a magnet and can be magnets in themselves. The ferromagnetic materials are what we call magnetic in everyday speech, so obviously we have to look for the strongest attractions in the ferromagnetic elements. There are only three of these, iron, nickel, and cobalt, at room temperature. If we go just below room temperature, gadolinium also turns ferromagnetic. Since just below room temperature is a normal temperature in Denmark, I consider gadolinium a ferromagnetic element and will include it in the tests. First test is the most obvious. Place samples of similar size on top of a powerful magnet and see how much force it takes to remove the samples from the magnet again. I will use this spring balance and zero it before each test so the weight of the container and sample doesn't count as pull force. I'll start with cobalt. This element is used in strong samarium cobalt magnets and cheaper Alnico magnets. Seems like we can expect it to do well. I will measure at two spots, the center of the magnet and at the edge where the magnetic field is stronger. At the center. The pull force needed to remove the cobalt rod is around 1.4 kilograms. At the edge, the magnetic field curls hard down towards the other pole, making the rod switch position. With more of the rod close to the magnet and in a stronger magnetic field, the pull force will be much higher. Looks like 5.2 kilograms for cobalt. Not a bad start. Next up is nickel. It is used in the relatively weak El Nico magnets and as coating on neodymium magnets, so I'm not expecting nickel to perform as well as cobalt. The pull force on the center is a mere 600 grams. On the edge, it's 1.4 kilograms, similar to cobalt on the weaker center. Let's switch to my favorite contender, iron. This element is the main part of the neodymium magnets, the strongest permanent magnets we know of, and also used in ferrite and alnico magnets. It should perform well. Yes, almost 2 kilograms on the center.
I'm gonna pause this just for a second. There's a reason why I want you to hear all these different types of materials that have these magnetic qualities and strengths. Because these the modern day cores and stuff like that, the way these transformers have to utilize different materials in order to get that magnetic flux to be stronger inside your deal so that you get more of those magnetic field lines across the copper wire or whatever and producing yet even more electricity. This is one of the things that the neodymium magnet accelerator will basically it'll benefit you. Trust me. Let's get back to this.
Must be high on the edge then. It sure is. 6.3 kilograms is very impressive for a small 12 gram sample. How about the outsider gadolinium? It is not a main part of any commercial magnets. It can be used to make neodymium magnets more resistant to demagnetization, especially at higher temperatures, but dysprosium seems to be preferred for this. Here in my living room, gadolinium is only paramagnetic, but let me test it anyway. At the center, it doesn't align vertically with the magnetic field like the others, a sign of it not being magnetized like a ferromagnet. But for comparable results, I'll measure it standing up like the others. 400 grams pull force, not bad for a paramagnetic material. Almost as good as the ferromagnetic nickel. It does surprisingly well at the edge too, 1.2 kilograms. Now I'm really curious to know how it performs in its ferromagnetic state. Depending on different sources, the transition should happen between 16 to 20 degrees Celsius. That's very convenient, because even in a warm winter, it is cold enough in my sunroom to turn gadolinium ferromagnetic. Let's see if it really works. Well, it clearly is a different reaction. Now it aligns vertically like the other ferromagnets. Isn't that amazing? The only difference is 10 degrees Celsius. Let's see how it performs. On the center, it has increased to 600 grams, the same as nickel, but on the edge. It is now almost 2 kilograms, better than nickel. The conclusion of the pull force test is that iron is the winner. Not a surprise. After all, it has Fe printed on it, the first two letters in ferromagnetism. Ferrum is Latin for iron, and ferromagnetism is named after iron. It is more surprising that gadolinium in its paramagnetic state is so close to the ferromagnetic nickel. Maybe my spring balance isn't precise enough at the low forces. Or is the gadolinium magnetized at room temperature? More testing is needed. I want to see how well the samples conduct the magnetic field from this tiny magnet.
So, another brief interruption. So you got like, some materials that are, temperature sensitive that would actually change the strength of the magnetism inside there, just by however warm it is or however cold it is. That's pretty interesting, right?
As a control test, I would try with 20mm air first. Air does not conduct the magnetic field well. Only 3 millitesla. Time for a montage of the results of the ferromagnetic elements before we test gadolinium. Out between 23 to 31 millitesla. Will gadolinium be any match for these values at room temperature? No, not at all. It isn't much better than air. It is not showing any ferromagnetic behavior. The ferromagnetic samples had a stronger magnetic field at the edge, a sign of them having poles like any other magnet. But I don't see it on gadolinium at this temperature. When we see a change at 11 degrees Celsius. Yes, now it acts like a ferromagnet. It is as strongly magnetized as nickel and also show higher values at the edge like the others. Okay, so gadolinium was clearly not magnetized in the first pull force test. Maybe we should try with a much more sensitive scale. I used this milligram scale to measure the weight of the rods. It can be used for a different pull force test as well. By putting a magnet at a fixed distance above the rod, we can see on the scale how much the rod is lifted by the magnet. For nickel, it is 4.8 grams. Let me show you the others. Look out for an odd result. Nickel winning clearly over gadolinium at 23 degrees Celsius. But cobalt beat iron? Now I am confused. Is cobalt more attracted at a distance than iron? We need to include one of my favorite tests, the long distance test I call the water bath run. Working with ferromagnetic elements in this test for the first time, I wanted to get a feel for how long I could make the water bath. I didn't film it, but I wasn't exactly successful. The glass slipped out of my gloved hand. Do remember to wear safety goggles when working with powerful magnets. Here's the final setup. Will cobalt beat iron again? Thank you. cobalt wins again, followed strongly by nickel, leaving iron only to beat gadolinium. The results from the distance tests baffle me. I cannot explain why iron is the strongest at the surface of the magnet, but at distance, cobalt seems to have the highest magnetic susceptibility. Any help and input from you in the comments is more than welcome. The final conclusion on my experiments is a bit messy. At room temperature, iron is attracted the most to a magnet. At the surface of the magnet, at a distance, cobalt seems to be attracted the most to a magnet. If we look at all temperatures, holmium is actually the strongest known elemental ferromagnet. However, it has to be cooled down below 20 Kelvin. My house is not prepared for handling the liquid helium needed to cool it.
Well, you can try it at my house because it's about that cold here. Alright, so there you go. Look, you know, that's some real science right there, folks. That's real science. He's taking these magnets and magnetic, ferromagnetic materials, and he's testing them out. And that's what real science is all about. So, you know, when these individuals out there are hollering all about this climate change and global warming, and it doesn't even match up to the basics of science, nor physics, or anything like that, and they're still trying to push this ridiculousness to the extent where they want to steal money out of your pocket, that's why I call it mad science. It's really aggravating. So anyway, I'm not going to dwell on that too much anymore, but it's just that, you know, every so often, there will be some sort of supposed representative. Some of these folks, I don't even know how they got elected, because they ain't very intelligent at all. It's almost as if the cabal or the secret societies or bankers or whatever are getting the stupidest people elected that they possibly can, you know, putting them out there. And it's like that movie Idiocracy. Everybody's getting dumber or something like that. I don't ever want to live in that world where everybody's stupid. So I'm hoping that you take the opportunity to go out there and educate yourself and do some tests on some things, you know, and practice real science instead of that crazy stuff that they're trying to do out there, you know. But, you know, stealing money from people under bogus science, that's where I draw the line. I'm not going to sit back and not say anything about it. They would call me in the science community a heretic, probably. Who cares? And, you know, I'm seeming like one of the very few real scientists left on this planet. So, you know, they can sit there and put their Neil deGrasse Tysons and their whoever the heck up there. Doggone, I can't even remember their name now, but they're all out there smoking crazy stuff or whatever. Anyway, so let's get on down the road here and play this one right here.
Out came 7,000 metal balls, and then they brought out a heavy-looking wooden box. On its lid was a label that read, Danger! What's inside? Here it is, the world's strongest magnet, a neodymium magnet. They began to slowly lower the magnet. The metal balls started to twitch, but the magnet is still 30 centimeters away.
Wow! That's so cool!
The space between the magnet and the ground is packed with the metal balls. It's even more surprising to touch.
It's stuck! It won't budge! I can take a few off the surface, but the rest won't move.
Once the balls are stuck, they can't be removed by hand. They have to be pried off, like this. The neodymium magnet was invented by a Japanese researcher in 1983. Its strength took the world by surprise.
I just saw the demonstration, but could you explain why it's so powerful?
I'll use this to explain.
Okay.
This is an iron rod, and here are some iron balls. On its own, the rod doesn't have the power to attract the balls. But if you attach a magnet to the iron, like this, Then the iron rod becomes magnetic. Detaching the magnet returns the rod to its original state.
Iron's atoms are actually small magnets, but because they don't point in the same direction, they cancel each other out, and the piece as a whole does not possess magnetic force. When a magnet is attached to the iron, all the mini magnets turn to face the same direction. This causes the iron to become one big magnet. But once the magnet is removed, the mini magnets in the iron return to their original direction, and the iron loses its magnetic force. This is where a metallic element called neodymium comes into play. Something amazing happens when neodymium is added to iron. Neodymium has the ability to keep the mini magnets spaced in the same direction. So even if the magnet is removed, the iron maintains a strong magnetic force. Thanks to neodymium, which allows iron to retain its magnetic force, the world's strongest magnet was born. Neodymium magnets contributed greatly to the development of energy-efficient air conditioners. When the Japanese government put strict energy-saving standards into place, which applied to any shipments from 2003, air conditioner manufacturers rushed to make modifications. After extensive research on ways to save considerable energy, they eventually focused on the motor. The exterior of both motors feature electric wire coils. But the inner rotating part of the new motor is very different. The electric wire coils have been replaced by neodymium magnets. These powerful magnets are used to rotate it. With conventional motors, electricity was sent to both the inner and outer part, and rotation occurs due to the repelling force of the two electromagnets. The new motor uses powerful neodymium magnets on the inside, so only the outer coils require electricity. Let's compare how much electricity each motor uses when rotated at the same strength. The new motor requires about 150 watts. This is half the electricity that the conventional motor used to perform the same function. Since 2003, almost all manufacturers in Japan have begun using neodymium magnets. The magnets have contributed significantly to energy efficiency. A revolutionary energy efficiency technology is being developed with neodymium magnets. This is Naoki Hirano, a researcher at an electronics company. He's working on a new type of cooling system. It's a magnetic refrigerating device. Let's find out how it works.
Here's a powerful magnet, a neodymium magnet. Now we'll put it...
A special metal is attached to the tip of the thermometer. When the metal is placed near the magnet, the temperature rises. And when it's pulled away from the magnet, the temperature drops 2 degrees. The metal's temperature is affected by changes in magnetic force. So Hirano had the idea of you...
Did you hear what he just said? Cooling things down or heating things up, putting two different materials together, one being a magnet and one being a special metal. Ooh, I could think a whole lot of stuff to do with that, couldn't you?
Using this metal, which shifts temperature drastically, and the powerful magnet to create an efficient cooling system. First, a narrow container is filled with this metal. The container is then placed on the inner side of the cylinder. In the center of the cylinder is a powerful neodymium magnet. When it rotates, the magnet alternately moves near, then away from the container. They then skillfully harness the cooling that occurs when the magnet draws away. The device is attached to a refrigerator. The device is then turned on. At the starting point, the inside of the refrigerator is 20 degrees, close to room temperature. Let's use a thermographic camera to see how the temperature changes. The inside of the refrigerator gradually changes from red to blue. The temperature is clearly dropping. About 15 minutes later, the refrigerator has cooled to about 4 degrees.
It's said to have the strength to double the efficiency of current air conditioners and refrigerators. With magnetic cooling, the stronger the magnet is, the higher the efficiency and power. So the strength of the magnet will be very important.
Dr. Mizushima, I'm impressed at how neodymium magnets cut power consumption in half, and I didn't know that it could be used in cooling devices.
Researchers both in Japan and abroad are working on the development of magnetic refrigerating devices. So far, they've developed one that has cooling capacity that exceeds 1,000 watts, and the research is still ongoing.
I can imagine that the need for neodymium magnet motors will only increase.
Yes, however, neodymium magnets have their own drawback. One is that they are vulnerable to heat. Motors rotate at high speeds and generate a lot of heat. So, this weakens the magnet's magnetic force.
Is there a way to solve this problem?
Yes, the solution is to add a rare earth called dysprosium. Having 1% of dysprosium is said to increase the heat resistance by 15 degrees. But the problem is that dysprosium is a scarce rare earth and the world's top producer, China, is limiting exports. To keep technological progress from coming to a halt, Japan needs to develop a technology that takes away the need for dysprosium.
Coming up, we have a study on a way to increase the heat resistance of neodymium magnets without using dysprosium. How far has research progressed? Let's find out.
This is Masato Sagawa, the inventor of the neodymium magnet. He is currently involved in a national project to reduce the need for dysprosium.
It's used in the manufacturing of motors in hybrid cars, which are very promising, and a variety of electric cars. If we don't find a solution, then production will come to a halt. So, it's an issue for the government and Japan as a whole.
This is the new neodymium magnet that Sagawa and his team are developing. The key is in the size of the magnet's particles. This magnet's particles are roughly 3 micrometers. They're much finer than regular magnet particles, which are about 5 micrometers. The finer the particles, the greater heat resistance it has, even without dysprosium. The mini magnets within the neodymium magnet particles are all facing the same way and have strong magnetic force. However, if the heat disrupts a part of the particle, then the disruption gradually spreads throughout the whole particle, and the particle loses its magnetic force. But if the particles are small, then even if some are ruined, the damage to the magnet as a whole is relatively small. The disruption of the mini magnets are contained within the particle and do not spread to other particles. Data shows that this method successfully increases the metal's heat resistance without requiring dysprosium. However, there's a major roadblock to this method. When comparing the particles of varying sizes side by side, the 3 micrometer particles automatically started burning. Because neodymium is highly reactive, the increased surface space comes into contact with the oxygen in the air, and it catches on fire. To handle the fine particles, the group is looking into a way to conduct the entire magnet production process in a non-oxygen environment. Plans are being made for the construction of a mass production facility.
The national project to reduce the need for dysprosium is still ongoing. According to Sagawa, they've been able to make neodymium magnets that can withstand 200 degrees Celsius heat with just one-third of the original dysprosium content. Of course, their goal is to completely eliminate the need for dysprosium. Well, it's good to know that they're making steady progress.
Yes. Besides developing technology to reduce dysprosium, researchers are looking for ways to reduce the amount of rare earths that is wasted during production and develop a recycling system. They're also working to find new rare earths. History has proven that necessity is the mother of invention, and it's led to many scientific breakthroughs. Perhaps this will be true for Japan's magnet research as well. I look forward to future progress.
Yeah, me too, man. I love the Chinese. I love the Japanese. I love all these folks out there that do all kinds of cool science and basically move us into the future. See, one of these days, folks, free energy is going to come around. It's not going to come around like you think it's going to come around. It's probably going to come around from the least likely of places. All these discoveries of different types of materials that do different things together and separated and stuff like that. Imagine a refrigerator that needed no electricity, that all it did was utilize what nature had already provided and basically keep your stuff cold without any electricity. So one of these days, without even knowing it, either the Chinese or the Japanese or some garage mad science guy is going to put something on the table that's going to level the playing field, so to speak, when it comes down to Stephen Gibbons says, don't say dodecahedron. You will have the alphabet soup agencies up here. He's right. Oh, man. I love these people. All right, so let's play this one here next.
In this video, I'm going to attempt to explain and demonstrate the relationship between electricity and magnetism. There is a relationship there, and there are basically two principles that you need to understand. The principles are called electromagnetism and induction. Electromagnetism is the principle that when electricity flows through a wire, so we'll connect these wires to the battery and connect them to the light bulb. When electricity flows through a wire, a magnetic field is created around that wire. So you would think I could grab my paperclip and bring it over here and it would stick to the wire, but it doesn't. But that doesn't mean that there isn't electromagnetism. It just means that the magnetic field isn't very strong around a single wire with a small amount of current flowing through it like this. So, for electromagnetism, what we end up doing is creating a coil where we wind a wire around an iron core several times, and by doing that, we concentrate the magnetic field, and it's strong enough that this would happen. And I'll show you in just a minute how that works. The second principle is the principle of induction, and that says that when a magnetic field passes over a wire, it will induce or create electricity and electrical current in the wire. So, according to that theory, we think we can probably eliminate the battery, just bring the wires over here like this. Let's grab our permanent magnet and come over here and move this across the wire, and we would hope to see the light bulb light. Again, it's obvious that it doesn't work. But that doesn't mean that we're not creating electricity. In order to use this principle to create enough electricity to light that light bulb, we would need to create a coil, so we would wrap the wire around an iron core several times so that as we move the magnet past it, it induces a larger amount of electricity that can then be used to light a light bulb or power some other device. Now, I should mention when it comes to induction that the magnet or the wire needs to be moving. We can't just set a magnet on the wire and expect that magnetism to create any kind of a current. It's actually the magnet passing over the wire which causes the electrons to dislodge and to be pushed in the circuit. So when I do this, when I move this magnet back and forth, there's literally a push and a pull of electrons moving in the circuit. It's just that it's so small in this case, it doesn't light the light bulb. That's the principle of induction. So basically, to summarize, when electricity passes through a wire, there's a magnetic field that is generated around that wire. So electricity makes magnetism. On the flip side, when a magnet passes over a wire, electricity is created in the wire. So magnetism creates electricity. It goes.
So, magnetism creates electricity.
Both ways. Okay, over here I've got a couple of rolls of magnet wire, and it's just really wire.
And electricity creates magnetism.
At first glance, you might think there's no insulation on this, but it does. This red coating is the insulation. You'll be able to see where I've stripped off that coating. You can see the copper center. It's a solid core wire. It's got a copper center with an insulating coating over top of it. Now, what you could do with this is take a nail or a screw or a bolt or something and take some of this magnet wire and just wrap it around many times. And as you do that, you've created a coil. Now, when we apply voltage to both ends of this wire, so if I was to cut this off and then connect each end of this wire to a battery, we will have concentrated the magnetic field enough that whenever there's current flowing through this wire, it'll become an electromagnet. Now, just to show you an example of this, I've got this little device here, a little homemade device. All this is, if you look at it, it's just a bolt, and it's just connected to this bracket that holds it up. So it's a bolt, and it's got a piece of magnet wire that's been wrapped around it. It looks like maybe 50 or 60 or 100 times. And here are the two ends, and they connect to this battery. Just got a little switch here, so when you connect this, when I push this button, you'll watch this nut that's hanging from this wire. This pulled over immediately, and when I let go, it releases it. So that's the principle of electromagnetism. We use that in relays, we use that in a lot of devices, electric motors, solenoids. Here's a great example of how electromagnetism can work. This is just a simple battery. And this battery connects to these two terminals. So when I place it in here, these two copper terminals are touching the battery. Then we have a permanent magnet. So this is the type of magnet you'd find on your refrigerator. It's a permanent magnet. That drops down into that hole. And right here, we're just taking a piece of this magnet wire, wrap it around a cylinder just to make a loop, and we've got both of the ends right here. So if you look at it, it's just been wrapped around. Now when we set that in here, I scrape some of that coating off of the copper wire so that it can touch these contacts. You'll see that immediately you can tell something's going on. It's creating a magnetic field around this loop right here that's either repelling or attracting the magnetic field of this permanent magnet. So if we get it just right, we might get it to work. It'll spin like a motor. But it's a good example of how we use electromagnetism. Now I'm going to show you how induction works. So I'll bring over one of these spools of magnet wire again. And because I'm going to induce a very small current, small voltage, I'm going to be using the lab scope so that we can see this. I've got my leads to my lab scope. The lab scope is set on voltage, and I'm just going to connect this onto the ends of these wires. The coating has been stripped off. So this is one single wire. This is just both ends of the wire. And so I'm going to grab our permanent magnet that we just saw a minute ago. I'm going to come over here and remember that I can't just place the magnet near the wire and hope for something to happen. I've got to move it. I'm going to come over here and move this back and forth across this wire. And as I do this, it's generating electricity. You can watch as the electricity is generated. You'll see the voltage going up and down. The faster I go, the faster it goes up and down. the closer I get the magnet to the wire as I do that, the stronger the signal is. And so you can see that I'm actually generating electricity and causing the electrons to move back and forth. Those are the principles of electromagnetism and induction.
Yay! See, another well explained video out there to show the kiddies too. Folks, I keep talking about the dream team. I keep talking about gathering up the most brilliant minds on the planet and bringing them together in your community. Because in every single community, you got a mad science guy somewhere in your community. You might not even know they're even there. Just notice this one guy that's always hauling around electrical junk and bringing it in and out of his garage or something like that, you know? And plus you got people in your community that know how to weld and some that know how to run machines and all that kind of stuff and electricians and electronic engineers. All the people that basically go out there and work for the man. And so those are the people that's actually going to help speed up everything out here as far as getting everybody, energy independent. That's what they said we all needed. I want to play another podcast here, but this one here, it's something cool that you can see. There's actually a video out there called Tractor Beam Magnet that you should check out, but it's pretty neat how this thing actually works.
Ferromedium discs, which are very strong magnets, and then curiously here we have a ring containing six very small neodymium magnets. And now to make the effect, we simply have to join these pieces together. Thus, that's quite strong now. And this one here, that's a strong one. To show how strong they are, we'll just bring it together and see what happens. It's going to push it away from quite a distance. Anyway, we want it to be attracting, so I'm going to put it in that mode there when it's going to come towards it, but we'll keep it away. Now, the ring here, we're going to get this into repulsion mode to try and get it to push away. Oh, it's attracting. So, I'll turn it over, and now it should repel. Yes, it's repelling. Now, the clever part is when you put these two pieces together as an assembly, we've now got a single magnetic system in which we have one that's going to be attracted to this, and a little set of ring of six, which are being repelled by this outside magnet. What's going to happen? When I bring this towards it, it's being attracted to the middle one, but it's being repelled by the little satellite ones on the outside. What could happen? It was attracted, and it stopped. It's been repelled. There's about an eighth or quarter inch air gap there now, where it can't get any closer, but not further away either. That's absolutely amazing. I turn this one, well, nothing much there. If I turn the big one, though, there's a ring. Let's see what happens. It turns around with it, still maintaining that air gap of about eighth to a quarter inch all the way around. It refuses to get any closer, and yet it won't go any further away either. It's a kind of equilibrium. It's stuck there, like an invisible arm joining the two together. It's called an inverter by the inventor, and it reminds him, I suppose, of the tractor beam in Star Trek. Invisible, but anyway, to me, it's magic. It's a physics I don't understand, but it's wonderful.
Alright, so the rest of this video is basically a guy sliding around a magnet that's following another magnet around, but they're not connecting to each other, which is another cool thing, because you talk about making frictionless bearings, the technology is already available to make bearings that basically float on a magnetic field, and so there ain't no friction involved in there. So, these videos that I bring to you, I post them all into the superchat.html, so in case you ever want to go take a peek at them after I share them out there, give you some ideas of things that you can work on and you know, test out, maybe even share with the classrooms at school and stuff like that. Now, I'm going to play another one. It's a little bit more high-tech as far as terminology and some mathematics, but it tells you a few things. It's really important in here. So I'm going to go ahead and push this one on, and then we'll move on from there.
This episode is supported by Prudential. So it's Friday, April 21st, 1820. A physics professor in Denmark named Hans Christian Ørsted is in the middle of a lecture and he's using a compass and an electric wire for a demonstration. He turns on the current that runs through the wire and he notices that the needle in the compass starts to move. And when he turns the current off, the needle moves back to where it was. Then he runs the current through the wire in the opposite direction and sees the needle move the other way. What Ørsted demonstrated that day was a fundamental discovery, the connection between electricity and magnetism. And it changed the field of physics forever. The relationship between electricity and magnetism not only explains what Ørsted and his students witnessed in 1820, it also makes possible much of the technology that's used today, from hydroelectric dams to your smartphone. It even explains why Earth's magnetic field is essentially keeping you from being cooked alive right now. And all you really need to understand the basics of magnetism and electricity is this. Familiar with the basics of magnets already. They have a north and south pole. Two of the same pole will repel each other, while opposites attract. Only certain materials, especially those that contain iron, can be magnets. It depends on their molecular properties. And other metals, including cobalt, nickel, and iron, are attracted to magnets, even though they aren't magnets themselves, like the metal in your refrigerator door. And there's a magnetic field around Earth, which is why you can use a compass to figure out which way is north. The magnet in the compass aligns itself with the Earth's magnetic field. Just as we use electric field lines to represent the electric field created by charges, we can draw magnetic field lines to represent magnetic fields created by magnets. And as with electric fields, the more crowded the lines are, the stronger the magnetic field. The lines point from the North Pole to the South Pole, like how electric field lines point from the positive to the negative charge. But there's a key difference. You can have an electric field spreading outward from a single electric charge, but that can't happen with magnets because you can't isolate one magnetic pole. If you chop a bar magnet in half, you don't end up with one north magnet and one south magnet. You end up with two magnets, each with its own north pole and south pole. This means that the magnetic field lines surrounding a magnet always form closed loops. We measure magnetic fields using a unit called the Tesla, which is 1 newton per ampere meter, and 1 tesla is a very strong magnetic field. The fields from some of the strongest superconducting magnets in the world are only 10 teslas. Now, when Ørsted was doing a demonstration on that fateful day in 1820, he was using a regular compass magnet. But when he brought the magnet closer to a wire carrying a current, the magnetic field from the current exerted a force on the needle, moving it to point in a different direction. Ørsted had discovered one of the fundamental principles of electromagnetism. An electric current produces a magnetic field. After a few more months of experimenting, Ørsted figured out that when a current runs through a wire, the magnetic field that it produces surrounds the wire. Expressed with field lines, the magnetic field would appear as circles with the wire at their center. If the current was coming straight towards you, the field lines would be pointing counterclockwise. And we use the vector B to represent the magnetic field. The magnitude of the vector is the strength of the magnetic field, and the direction of the vector is the field's direction. Now, there's an easy way to remember how the direction of the electric current and the direction of the magnetic field it produces relate to each other. It's called the first right-hand rule, because there are actually three right-hand rules. Just take your right hand and point your thumb in the direction of the electric current. Now curl your fingers. The direction your fingers are curling, that's the way the magnetic field lines are pointing. And likewise, if you know the direction of the magnetic field lines, you can use the rule to figure out the direction of the current in the wire. It really comes in handy. Now, if a current running through a wire exerts a force on a magnet, you might expect the opposite to be true as well, that a magnet exerts a force on a current running through a wire. And it does, which is good, because that's what's protecting us from harmful radiation from the sun right now. The direction of the force from a magnetic field on a current running through a wire will be perpendicular to both the magnetic field and the current. Which brings us to the second right-hand rule. This one helps you keep track of three directions: the direction of the magnetic field, the current, and the force. Here's how to use the second right-hand rule. Point your arm in the direction of the current, then bend your fingers so they're perpendicular to your palm. This represents the direction of the magnetic field. Your thumb, which is perpendicular to your fingers, is the direction of the force on the wire. But what about the strength of that force? You can use your hands to figure this out too, but you'll have to use them to do math. Sorry. The magnitude of the force from a magnetic field on a wire is equal to ILB sine theta. This equation tells us that there are four factors that affect the magnitude of the force. First, there's the current in the wire. That's I. And the stronger it is, the stronger the force is. Second, there's the length of the wire running through the magnetic field. That's L. And the longer the wire is, the stronger the force is. Third, there's the magnetic field B. And the stronger B is, the stronger the force. Finally, the closer to perpendicular the current is with respect to the magnetic field's direction, the stronger the force is. That's where sine theta comes in. Its maximum value is 1 when theta is 90 degrees. So the current is perpendicular to the magnetic field lines. That's when the force will be strongest. Similarly, the minimum value of sine theta is 0 when theta is 0. So that means the current is parallel to the magnetic field lines. And in that case, there won't be any force on the wire at all. Now, all of this math can help us understand how we're being protected right now from solar radiation. The sun is constantly shooting radiation towards Earth in the form of charged particles. But luckily for us, Earth has a magnetic field. Currents are made up of moving electric charges, so it makes sense that a magnetic field would also exert a force on single electric charges that pass through it. And this is exactly what the Earth's magnetic field does to the charged particles coming from the sun. It deflects them, sending them spiraling away and protecting us from the worst of the radiation. Let's suppose you wanted to find the magnitude of the force of the magnetic field on a single charged particle from the sun. All you'd have to do is change the equation we use for the force on the current to account for the fact that we're talking about a single charge. The equation for the force of a magnetic field on a current says that the strength of the force is equal to the current times the length of the wire, times the strength of the magnetic field, times the sine of the angle between the current and the magnetic field. Now, two of those variables don't apply to a single charge, the current I and the length L. But current is just equal to the number of charged particles passing a given point over a certain amount of time, which we'll call N, times their charge Q, divided by that time T. For a single charge, N is just 1, and the length is just equal to velocity V multiplied by time. So we can apply these two facts to our equation for force, which tells us that the force on an electric charge moving through a magnetic field is equal to Q divided by time, multiplied by velocity times time, times the strength of the magnetic field, times the sine of theta. These two T's cancel each other out, so the equation simplifies to F equals QVB sine theta. That means that like the force on a current running through a wire, the force on a single electric charge depends on four factors. One is the same as with a current. The stronger the magnetic field, the stronger the force. The other three factors are slightly different from the case with a current. First, the force is stronger the closer to perpendicular the charge's velocity is to the magnetic field lines, which means that if the charge's velocity is parallel to the magnetic field lines, there won't be any force on it whatsoever. Second, the more charge the particle has, the stronger the force. And third, the faster the particle is moving, the stronger the force. Finding the direction of this force is where the third right-hand rule comes in. So get your right hand out again, straighten your fingers with your thumb stretched outward, then point your arm in the direction of the particle's velocity. Then bend your fingers to make them point in the direction of the magnetic field lines. This is where things get a little tricky. If the charged particle is positive, your thumb is pointing in the direction of the force. But if it's negative, the force is pointing in the direction opposite your thumb. So electric currents create magnetic fields, and magnetic fields exert forces on electric currents and charges. Oersted's experiment was simple, but his discovery linked two major fields of physics and inspired other scientists to do a lot more experimenting. Today you learned about magnetism and the magnetic field created by a current running through a wire. We also talked about the force from a magnetic field on a current running through a wire and on a single charge moving through a magnetic field. And we went through the three right-hand rules. Thanks to Prudential for sponsoring this episode. Saving a little more today, even just 1% more of your annual income, can go a long way toward building a better retirement tomorrow. Let's do a math equation. Say a 25-year-old that earns $40,000 a year is planning on retiring at 70. If they save an additional 1% of their salary by deducting $32 a month from their paycheck and earn 6% compounding interest, they could increase their retirement savings by about $97,943.73. Math is not just for physicists. Go to raceforretirement.com for more information. Crash Course Physics is produced in association with...
So, like that, did that, all that math stuff, beat your brain toothless? It did mine. I tell you what, go over and look at the mechanical genius. I put a doggone video up there, my neodymium magnet accelerator. Because what I did was I took all the mechanics of what you just heard right there and basically improved upon what could be the future of electric motors. So the reason why I'm trying to play all these different little podcasts for you on these different mad science shows is because by the time I get through putting things on the table, I want you to have a really good general understanding of what exactly is going on there. You know, there's all kinds of different transistors and MOSFETs and different types of solid-state electrical components that you can use to basically mimic the magnetic field, and by the different types of ways that you can actually wind coils and stuff like that, you can produce a generator, a really super efficient generator. We have the technology to do so. And with the video that was talking about different types of paramagnetic, diamagnetic, and the different qualities of different materials, metals and such, like some of them they're not as magnetic in warm weather, but they're even stronger in colder weather. So that means that you got a temperature sensitive material that if you wanted to build a sub-zero weather generator, you could build a magnets out of that particular type of material, or the rotors or whatever out of that particular type of material, so that it would perform really good in cold weather. And basically maybe even slow itself down a little bit in warmer weather when you didn't need as much power or something like that to make it yet more efficient. Basically a smart electric motor. Wouldn't that be cool? So anyway, I posted the link to my neodymium magnet accelerator. Keep an eye on that particular video because I'm in the works of doing an upgrade to that system right there. That when I share with people, if you understand the basic physics and basic science of what I'm showing you, you're going to be really pleased with that particular project. And so, right now, basically I'm having to have things engineered for a specific task, because most of what I'm trying to do doesn't exist on the market today. So in order to get certain materials bent in certain directions, it takes a little bit of time and a heck of a lot of money in order to get people involved. But if you could get your dream team together and share your resources, taking all these things that we, all this knowledge that we have access at our fingertips, you'd be surprised at what you could come up with that would be solutions to things that you got going on in your neighborhood or whatever. I'm actually going to be doing a deal here pretty soon called Vital Caps for Science, where I don't remember if I posted it or not. I'm going to have to post the picture on there onto the Mad Science page or whatever. But either way, I'm going to be putting some buckets out here and there, different places that allow me to do so, and basically show people how to turn trash into a solution. Because the type of material that the plastic bottle caps are made out of is really user-friendly material when it comes to temperature-wise and heating it up and forming it to whatever shape you want. There's all kinds of possibilities with it. And if you can use trash to fund your research to help benefit and move, move technology forward, I think that would be a good thing. Might become a day whenever you find out that there is no such thing as trash. See, when it comes to nature, there is no such thing as trash. Nature recycles everything. And don't buy all the hype whenever they're sitting there telling you, oh, well, these plastics, they'll be in the dump for thousands of years and all that. No, they won't. Nature will biodegrade everything. Everything is carbon-based. Even when you burn a piece of firewood, the firewood's not gone. Now, the physical shape of the firewood, what it used to be from the time when it was a tree or whatever, all the way till the time you chopped it down and you made firewood out of it and then you burnt it in your fireplace, then you think that you just destroyed that wood. It's gone forever. It's not. Basically, you change the chemistry makeup of that and the physical makeup of that wood, and you extracted the energy in the process of doing so. So with that said, all those materials left over, one of which is actually a problem if you allow it to build up inside your chimney, you could actually start a chimney fire. I actually saw one of those in my deal because I didn't clean it out fast enough. And it plugged up and basically created a fire cannon and shot a big old chunk of black crud up out in probably about 20, 30 feet in the air. And so that's not a safe deal, but basically it showed you something, that even after I burnt that firewood, it deposited extra fuel up in the chimney. And so, you know, they got these logs that you can burn that will, you know, take the creosote and make it where it's not going to burn on you, and you keep your chimney clean and you don't have to worry about all that. But nonetheless, with that particular substance that was put up in there, you know, you got another flammable surface that, or another flammable material that could actually be turned into more fuel. And plus the wood ash, there's all kinds of different uses for wood ash out there, not excluding using it for fertilizer on your doggone garden, for Pete's sake. A lot of folks, when they burn off their fields, they don't want the ash or anything to blow away. They want it to settle down because it puts the proper materials, fertilizers down inside there to help the regrowth of... matter of fact, go look up different forest fires, what they look like after the entire forest had burnt down and then nature put everything back the way it was. I mean, it comes back, it's clear, it's greener, it looks better. That's why I call lightning nature's tree trimmer. And that's that one that we talked about there earlier, where I said, nature of electricity. Lightning is a natural weather phenomenon that occurs around the world every day. It happens when electrical charges and clouds separate and need to find each other again to neutralize. Nature always balances itself out. I threw that one in there. Now, the electricity produced by lightning can contain intense voltage and heat. Free energy. Flat out. And now you still have people want to argue with you about it. But lightning is quite literally nature's tree trimmer. Lightning will start fires and it'll trim off all the underbrush and open it up so that new plant life can grow, and all that material from the ash and everything goes down and turns around and becomes fertilizer for the new plants coming up. So nature recycles everything. I gotta get a drink of my coffee here. So if nature recycles everything, maybe we should mimic nature and do what nature does. Maybe we should learn how nature uses energy and use it. That's what the neodymium magnet accelerator basically does. Is whenever you get to see what it is that where I'm going with that thing, by the time, if you've been listening to my radio show and watching my YouTube videos, you already know what's going on, because you're already well educated as far as all the different sciences that actually went into it, because you saw it, you watched the stuff as it progressed. And a lot of times I would show a video and I would say, now this is really important, keep an eye on this or something like that, this is really important part of the piece of the puzzle, because every bit of it is all pieces of the puzzle. In order for the average Joe to be able to replicate any of these particular devices or anything like that, first they need to know what the heck it's all about. You want to know, you know, what's in it before you make something. You want to know why it is that these things do what it is that they're doing. And that's how we learn. We watch what nature does. You know, like for example, you know, there's a bug out there that they call, some people call them fireflies and some people call them lightning bugs. They carry around their own built-in flashlights. Pretty doggone neat. You can see them out there. They're beautiful. During the summertime, you get a crowd of fireflies rolling around, and they're amazing. Nature's beautiful. Nature does a lot of amazing things. And so, with that said, I wonder if Patty wants to join me. I'm just going to add her to the call and see what happens. What do you think, folks? Patty Walking Turtle, she's awesome. I'll send her a message. I'm going to call her up and just drag her in. to the Mad Science Show. Because here's a lady that knows a lot about nature. All right? Her and her buddy, Barbara Three Crow, both of them, they study nature. So they're scientists and they don't even know it. How you doing there, Patty?
I didn't know I was a scientist.
You do now. You learned a lot from nature, didn't you?
Yes, I did. In fact, listening to what you were playing on earlier today, I've just recently also, me and Barb have always talked about how nature teaches us everything we need to know. And my world has been expanded because of the information I've been coming across lately on the magnetic tether that we have to the universe and the energy that flows through that. Yeah, interesting stuff.
Well, it all acts like gears in the machine if you actually look at how it all functions. And that's one of the things that this new gizmo that I've been trying to share with people for quite some time. I actually did this years ago, but I had a problem getting the right materials together in order to do it right. But now I've revived it and actually going into the neodymium magnet accelerator number 3. And that's going to be the one to really keep an eye on. But it takes every bit of all the physics that we've talked about, whether it be, space, how space works with the, magnetic fields and, the way that the planets lock in with each other and all that, all the stuff that you learned in science class, it's going to show it in a mechanical, if you look at like how gears turn, this gear turns.
Like clockwork.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's basically taking science, which normal science, the real science, was the observation of nature. Why do these things work? How do they work? How does the firefly carry around his own flashlight? Where does he get the electricity to run that light? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
We're taught to look at radiation as a bad thing. But energy is radiation, right?
Oh yeah, because it's vibrating at crazy frequencies. There's some frequencies of sound that you cannot hear. Your ears are just not quick enough to hear it. But if you were, it'd probably drive you insane because there'd be this crazy noise in the background that would just get on your nerves. So nature's put it just right where it's comfortable. We can understand what each other's saying without all the static and the squealing of what's going on in the world. Because if you could actually hear all the energy that's moving around you, your mind would be so cluttered up you wouldn't have no time to think. Because everything out there is a frequency wave. Energy travels in waves. It's amazing how it just mimics everything that we're trying to do and thinking we're really brilliant as science folks or we're genius humans. I'm not saying we're stupid or anything, but we can't scratch the surface of what nature's done.
Right, and the thing that I've realized. It through what I've been learning lately, and anybody who wants to really get a grasp on what's happening in our universe with our magnetic fields and with all the planets, why things are in conjunction working together, like we said, like a clockwork, there's science behind that it's in your face. You can actually, even a layman like me, and she says I'm a layman, but even I can understand these concepts, but yet the science that we have today is not latching on to that.
They're trying to tell us global warming when I'm sitting here with my snowsuit on in my lab.
Right. When we have clear historical evidence that proves out the magnetic theory of attachment. Everything runs on this.
Yep.
Everything. And like you were saying, the energy is everywhere. It flows constantly, is in constant flow. We can act upon that energy. We can change a frequency simply by everything, movement, thought, speech, it doesn't matter what it is. We affect energy in our daily lives, and we see it in nature also. Nature requires energy, and the only way it gets that is through this magnetic tether, and the whole universe is connected this way. It's beautiful. It's perfect.
Well, nature,
you know,
nature and man and all life for that matter have a symbiotic relationship with each other. We're part of the machine. When we breathe out, we're exhaling plant food, you know. And when they breathe out, they're exhaling oxygen for us. So, you know, we feed each other. They keep us breathing, and then when we eat food, it produces energy, because our body's a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. And you want to talk about free energy, look at the human body. You know, that's just mind-blowing. Maybe that's why in the Matrix they tried to use us as batteries.
Well, you know, there is a, you know, on that concept, you could make a human a battery.
Oh, yeah.
They
got different machines now where you can use the body temperature, and the body temperature, it will tell you what your temperature is, but it uses the heat off of your body to do a little thermoelectric process that produces electricity to run a little circuit to tell you how warm you are. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And so I've been watching you and following you with this science, that the experiments that you've been doing and the things you've been putting together. And I remember people tell you all the time, there's no such thing as free energy. It's not free, but it is. It's everywhere. How can they deny that fact? And then watching you with your projects that you've been putting out there, I see the people responding to you on your videos now are saying, now they're getting it. Whereas when you first started this, there were people that were kind of, oh, I think what you're seeing is da-da-da-da-da instead of da-da-da-da-da, you know.
Yeah.
But on the last videos you put out, I've seen a couple of them saying, wow, you know, because they're finally getting it.
I got a couple major channels out there that I really like that are actually taking note of the magnet accelerator, and they were putting comments in there about what they could do with that, and that's what I wanted all along. And all these little anomalies that I kept showing everybody, these were all pieces of the puzzle. I knew what they were for. I knew why I was trying to share them to them. But until people get those pieces of the puzzle and start putting them together, you know, they, like you said, they used to come around and call me everything under the sun, tell me how stupid I was. But I'm enjoying now that some of the most brilliant people out there are really honestly taking note, and, you know, they're going to take these technologies and run with them. That's all I ever asked from anybody, was if you see something good and you can use it, take it, expand on it, make it better, you know. If you see something that I done wrong, say, hey, try this material. It'll work better. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and, you're working on this. There are other people working on this. There are other people proving this. This is all part of Tesla also.
Yep.
I mean, it's not anything that hasn't been out there yet. The science community refuses to step into this.
Yeah, that's what I've been trying to tell them forever. These aren't new technologies. Some of the technologies, like especially with Tesla, you know, they've been around for a long time. Tesla was good at putting pieces of the puzzle together, and he showed us amazing things where now we've got AC current, we're talking on the internet, using wireless technologies and stuff like that. But it seems like the mainstream don't want to take it any further past selling you an iPhone, because if you get this much power in your hand, you don't have to pay an electric bill anymore. Imagine what you'll do with all that extra money.
Exactly. And they lose control, because as long as they have you needing them, then you can't step out on your own. And that's what the oil is all about. You know, we don't need energy from oil, from gas, from any of this. We don't have to use the resources that are provided on this earth to produce energy, because, like you said, the energy is everywhere, and we have the ability, and we know that there is a science that proves it out, that we can produce whatever we need in whatever abundance we need. It's not, you don't run out of it. There's no peak, you know, to the energy of the universe.
Right, it's
amazing.
Right now we're brutalizing our appliances. We're brutalizing energy because it doesn't take near the amount of power to run all the things that we run. Yet we're pushing this power towards it, and then we were wondering why it is that our things get hot and then they burn up. You know, we got to find ways to get rid of energy. So there's one right there that just blows my doors off. If I'm running a computer, and I run these computers long enough, the processors in there, they're not used to handling a lot of current, so they got to get rid of that heat. Somehow they got to get rid of that heat. So while I'm actually using my computer, I'm generating heat. And they're saying, well, there ain't no such thing as free energy. There's too many losses. Why is it a loss? Because that heat is now helping me warm my room up. It ain't a loss if you use it. And you take all of what would have been a loss, you put them into systems that will recuperate that heat energy, and now you use that heat energy for something else. They've actually got gaming systems that are water cooled now. Did you know that?
Yes. So I'd love to have one.
What do they do with that heat engine? That heat, what do? They just push it out, you know? It never ceases to amaze me that, you know, when people talk about how there's losses in everything, well, it's only a loss, like I said, if you don't utilize it. I mean, imagine what you could do with the amount of heat that an internal combustion engine produces under the hood of the car. Think about how much thermoelectrics you could get out of that. With the right materials and the temperature difference between under the hood of your car to the outside air, if the outside air was near the temperature that your car engine is, we'd be toast. Body doesn't like to be above 98.6 degrees. Anything, you know, 100 and up, we start to sweat. And anything higher than that, you know, we start to burn. So if we took that heat energy out of that car and we focused it where we wanted it to go, we'd have so much power we wouldn't know what to do with. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, the power that we do use right now in our appliances, like you're saying, it's harmful. It's harmful to us, and it's harmful to the environment, the way we use energy today. There's no reason for us to be putting ourselves or nature in harm's way.
But they don't want to make it efficient, because if they make it efficient, then it won't make them as much money.
Exactly.
I mean, things have to break down, Patty. Otherwise, we can't sell things. That's how people justify the fact that we're not sitting here not discussing free energy. That's why the trolls will come out there, oh, there ain't no such thing as free energy. Or the indoctrinated, which is worse than the trolls, they'll come out and they'll say, oh, there ain't no such thing as free energy. Well, if there was ever a case for over unity, the doggone internal combustion engine would be that, because you start off with a little fuel, and the amount of BTUs that thing is able to produce while producing horsepower and running your air conditioner, your radio, and all your lights and all that kind of stuff, that thing is putting out so much power. It is a rolling power plant of epic proportions. And yet, we got problems because we don't understand that there's thermal breakdown points where things will fail. Well, if we know where that weak spot is, we know what type of materials we can replace that with to make it better. Well, they don't want to do that either, because it has to break down. Otherwise, we can't sell you more cars.
And she says, how simple, how simple is this neodymium magnetic system?
Oh, it's so set up. It's so ridiculously simple. And by the time it's all said and done, I'm trying to put these things together in kits so that I can ship them out to people who's interested in researching them. Because what you saw in that video wasn't even half of what that thing can do. I got this thing fired up one day, and that magnet, it was flying around there so incredibly fast. And if you think of how a magnetic field actually, and a magnets and coils actually interact with each other, you got to have those lines of flux from that magnetic field crossing those wires to, you know, shake loose the electrons and produce the electrical current, right? Well, when you got, you know, just a magnet running, let's say 1,000 RPMs, it's going to produce a, you know, a bunch of current. Well, when you got that thing running at 50,000 RPMs, it's going to produce a massive amount of voltage, and voltage is pressure. And so this thing actually produced enough doggone power that it started feeding back on itself and started a wire fire, and that was with one magnet. All right, the original version had multiple magnets in there. You had to keep those multiple magnets separated by some non-magnetic materials, which I used nylon balls at the time, because those are the only ones I could find that were non-magnetic, and they were 3/4 round, and I had nylon, about 3 or 4 nylon balls in between each one of the neodymium magnets. So if this one single one has the capability of doing what I say it'll do, then you can imagine what multiple magnets in that thing would do. You'd have a really powerful generator, and all you have to do is put in an input of a same doggone circuitry like they use for flyback transformer technologies for producing high voltage. All it's doing is shifting a wave back and forth, which is causing that magnet to interact with that magnetic field, pulsing back and forth, and it does it in such an extreme fashion that that little neodymium magnet's in there spinning like there ain't nothing fast enough I can even think about. It's taking off like a rocket. But, you know, I put that little device on the table, and I'm putting it in the simplest form fashion that anybody who watched the video could actually set it up, and they could test it out. And when they see what this thing's actually capable of, and they add little things to it, like what Star Collection, I think it is. He does some really good magnetic deals where he's spinning around, and he makes these really awesome pancake coils, and he's shooting for super efficiency. Well, his engineering, with this engineering right here, you would have the perfect generating system. That little magnet spinning around there so fast, you don't need multiple magnets, because those lines of flux are crossing those doggone wires so rapidly, and they're constantly flying around in that circle and changing the magnetic field, and that's how you induce a current in the wire. You see what I'm saying? It's,
yes.
It's crazy simple. But that's the reason, one of the reasons why I like to, anytime I build a device like that, I like to make them out of like a clear acrylic so that you can actually see what's going on inside there. So it would also be a good teaching tool as well to explain to people how this thing's actually doing what it's doing. You know, everybody knows that a magnet has a north field and a south field, and when it's in it's going to try to align itself with the magnetic field that you're inducing in the current whenever you in the coil, whenever you're putting it to a battery. Well, in this incident, it can't align itself because the field is changing so rapidly that it gets that thing spinning, and as it's spinning around there, it starts to induce a current that starts to push back on the one that you're trying to get the thing to run with, which is really quite incredible. And if on the scale of what I'm showing right here does as good as it does, then you can imagine what would happen if you scaled that up into a larger version with a big old giant, maybe a 2-inch neodymium magnet. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you know, again, going back to nature, it has been showing us forever how the magnetics of the universe work.
Well, yeah,
how these tethers work.
They say that the Earth is going 66,000 miles an hour around the sun. You know how fast that is?
Yeah. You know, and also just watch, you know, people, especially in the northern hemispheres, and now even down to the men in Southern, you have Aurora Borealis.
Oh, yes, beautiful.
And that is caused by this energy that we are getting from the sun, from this magnetic tether, and it's trying to find a ground. It's trying to equalize itself.
Yep.
So we have the principles right in front of us that, look, you see these beautiful colors you're seeing and you think they're so beautiful. That's energy. That is pure energy.
That's what we're
looking at. You know, but people don't get that concept because it's not taught.
No, and that's a shame because back in the old days when I was going to science class, they would have talked about stuff like that. They would have said that's what that is. They would have said you're looking at plasma when you're looking at that because the energy that's being charged up is energizing all the gases in the atmosphere, and it's quite literally producing a plasma reactor. So everything that Tesla taught and all the different devices that you've heard about through history, like the Mercury Arc Rectifier, which is a brilliant piece of machinery. I mean, that thing is amazing. It just takes a little tiny pool of mercury. You shoot some high voltage in there. It heats that mercury up. Since the mercury is a liquid metal, it vaporizes it into gas, and then it keeps on sending that energy in, and it causes all these molecules inside there, the vapors, to energize into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. And there is a lot of power in plasma.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And it's everywhere. I mean, what they're seeing in these purple skies and things that they're witnessing across the globe right now, that's caused from this plasma. And these transformers that are blowing up and everything, this is from the energy having to find a way to ground itself. It's going to the Earth is going to try to equalize itself. And the only way it can do that is to discharge,
Nature always balances itself back out. And that's why I said about earlier when I was talking about doing that bucket bottle caps for science deal, because I want to show people how to turn trash into a solution, and maybe this won't end up in the ocean anymore. And so if I can get some younger generations interested in this, because they'll actually have something physical that they can hold in their hand that shows that this isn't trash. Nothing's trash. There's nothing in this world that's trash. Nature recycles everything. Now, we'll put the wrong chemicals into the water, and we'll make that water unstable, and fish won't be able to live in it. And so, that's a problem. And, somebody was saying, didn't they use mercury vapor in the Nazi bell as a means of propulsion? That was A947-30. I never got a chance to look at the Nazi bell. I mean, I've seen some videos about it, but I never really got the chance to mechanically, study the inside of that. But it doesn't matter, because if you understand how all this is actually working, whether it be levitation or anti-gravity or even artificial gravity for if you want to go through space, once you understand what these materials will do and how they will interact with each other, there's no limits to where we could go, Patty. There ain't no limits whatsoever.
And
I'm just frustrated because we're being held back by a system that would rather keep us enslaved mentally, emotionally, and physically, and financially, when, you got a guy like me sitting here saying, look, there's this technology, there's that technology, and they're over here telling it's global warming while I'm sitting here in my snowsuit in front of a computer. Ain't no global warming. Nature's always changed the climate, and nature will use and recycle everything. It doesn't matter what it is, nature will recycle it. And I even talked about when you burn firewood, you think that wood's gone. It ain't gone. It just changed chemistries. Some of it changed to a form of a gas, other changed to a different wood ash, or some of it changed into creosote that's now clogging up your chimney and could cause a chimney fire if you don't understand what's going on and keep it clean. But nonetheless, you in the process extracted energy, changed the shape of something, changed the physical everything of it, and produce more fuel in the process, plus you produce fertilizer, There's like 10 different things that you can do with wood ash. Did you know that? Actually, probably more than that, but I found at least 10.
Well, I knew there was a bunch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it's just like water, too. I mean, water changes properties and becomes a gas or becomes a vapor and evaporates, rises up, and then comes back down. It changes again.
Yeah.
Everything in our earth, on our earth, including us, go through processes of change.
Yep.
And so these principles should show us that even in health, there are uses and ways that we can induce health within the body using frequencies, using these principles that nature provides us.
Well, water is probably my favorite molecule out there because not only is it the most stable molecule on the planet, it's the most destructive, the most powerful, the most life-giving. You can use water for so much. I mean, the oxygen alone is a healing deal inside there. And hydrogen, oxygen together, you know, you've heard of hydrogen peroxide, right? It's got its uses. But nonetheless, it's an amazing material that you just cannot destroy. No matter how hard you try to destroy water, you can pollute it. And they even say water has a memory. So you could probably even make water feel bad if you want to. It probably won't be any good for you.
Actually, that goes even beyond water because they've done those same experiments with rice and cooked rice and have noticed that on the same principle of the water, that the vibration and the frequency of which your words affect that water also affect rice in the same manner.
Well, I think that as far as nature and us and everything, I think that not just people are joined. I think that nature and people and everything, all life itself, is all part of one massive machine. You know, we're part of the system, whether we like it or not. And we need to take care of that system. Otherwise, the system, you know, not going to be too pleased about it. But why?
Yeah, and we need to understand the relationship that we are intricately tied to
everything.
The universe, the whole of the universe. Yes.
Well,
and you know, when you look at the universe and you say, well, how big is the universe? Well, nobody knows. You can't possibly know how big the universe is, but you do know that the universe is made up of this energy. And that it is free flowing and it is a constant, and that like the clock works, it runs in conjunction with each other. What happens on one side of the universe makes its way here because everything is magnetically tethered. And so understanding this gives us a bigger picture of who we truly are.
Yep.
You know, in our relationship, not just with the earth, but with the universe.
Well,
and understanding those principles has brought me a greater understanding, Shaziz, of the principles of which you are doing these experiments on.
Anon 4730 said, we have people with limited knowledge declaring that they know it all, and by prohibiting others from advancement, maintain control of the paradigm. What they fail to realize is that humans are magnificent beings capable of seeing through the smoke screen of control. What they use against us can also be used to empower. See, that's brilliant. That's what I'm talking about.
See, yes, I agree.
That's what I'm doing here, folks. I'm turning a negative into a positive because this ridiculousness that we have to endure. You know, there shouldn't be nobody on this planet dying of thirst. I said water is the most powerful, the most stable molecule. That's what science said, all right? Not only is water a life-giving substance, but we got the technology how to clean it up. We got the technology how to use it as fuel, quite literally. and be able to have that fuel be clean running. You know, hydrogen technology is amazing, but they want to stop you at a certain limitations. And there are certain entities out there that claim themselves to be super educated, like the Mythbusters. I used to be a fan of the Mythbusters because I love science. But until they poo-pooed hydrogen technology and the way that they did it to basically, you know, make it look like, well, that's why we don't use hydrogen, because it's too dangerous and all this kind of stuff. No, it ain't. It's all how you use anything. You can cause problems with anything if you use it improperly. But if you're working in perfect harmony with nature, doing everything that nature already does, we got the technology and the materials and the resources right now to build the perfect internal combustion engines that will give us enough power to even run all the inefficient junk that we've got right now. But this neodymium magnet accelerator that I'm talking about, we don't even have to go that route. We don't even have to build internal combustion engines. All we got to do is learn what nature's already showed us, and we can produce enough high voltage to charge up enough storage banks to run us for eternity. We're never going to run out of energy. It's not possible. It's not possible to run out of water. There's nothing on this planet that wasn't here that isn't here right now. It may have changed forms, but it is still here in some sort of form of energy, some sort of material. It's still here. Nature recycles everything. The whole entire system is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It's self-healing, and it will teach you how to heal it. Heal yourself. Ain't that incredible? I mean, think about all these alternative medicines out there you can't even get a hold of because they so-called genius peoples, the EPA, the protectors of the people, you know, they're going, yeah, you can't have that plant because that's not safe, or, you know, people going to go crazy or whatever. You see what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah. And it's you talked about how they think that hydrogen is so dangerous to use. Well, let's see. Let's do a study on how many people have died from producing oil energy or electrical energy.
Oh yeah, not to mention the environmental hazards of dumping the crud all over the place where it didn't belong to begin with.
Well, and yeah, and how many people have you know, the way we use energy today, it's errant energy because it's only controlled as long as it's not interfered with. As soon as it's interfered with, and if it's interfered with by a human's gonna die.
Yep.
You know? And so we have to wonder, why are we using something that is adverse to our biology when we have, ability to use something that is synchronous with our biology.
Well,
you know,
in the future, I crack up because every time I see that old Back to the Future, I think it's 2 or 3 or something like that, Doc Brown comes there and he's throwing trash inside the deal in order to fuel up the car, and talk about they don't need roads where they're going and all that kind of stuff. But imagine a day that come along when you go to the fuel station, and, well, you probably wouldn't even have to go to the fuel station, but let's just say hypothetically they still had fuel stations where you're going to go get some water, and you pump your tank full of water. Everybody's like, well, no, that ain't going to work because water is non-compressible. You can't compress a liquid. Well, no, but if you know the physics of it, you can heat it up a little farther. Get those molecules dancing around inside there, bring them around, break them down some more, break them down into their finest molecules, and by the time it hits a 300 degree cylinder and hits down inside there, it will superheat and flash the steam and expand 1600 times its volume, and then on the upstroke with the compression, it will separate the hydrogen and oxygen, cracking it and igniting it on demand. And now you got the most powerful engine in the history of time, that when the exhaust comes out the other end of the pipe, it's not even polluting planet. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's amazing. It is amazing to see how perfect this whole system is, the natural system. It blows my mind, Shaziz, and it just shows me that the Creator is the
best artist, the best mechanic, the best electrician, the best of the
scientists. Yeah. I mean, there's no way that we can even conceptualize what it took to put the universe together and acting in unison. I mean, think of that. It blows my mind. Everything from, even you just take our small little planet and you look at the way that life exists. It exists from the very smallest microbe in the earth all the way up to us, you know, the do-all be-all supposedly. And everything is synchronized together to work in perfect unity. There's nothing wasted. There's no waste whatsoever in the universe. Everything is geared and set up to support one another on down the line. The whole universe expresses itself in one language, you know?
Yeah.
And out of this one language comes everything. It's amazing. It's miraculous.
I misspelled my message in the chat. Did you get it?
No.
Oh, it's in a Skype chat. Anyway, it's just, it's mind-blowing. But the whole key about it is that, you know, I want to try to get people's mind outside the box so that they can excel. I want to see how far we as humans can actually go. You know, I would love to one day see the Star Trek version of life, you know, where everybody's got everything they need. You go walk up to this machine and tell it what you want and it makes it for you. That would be kind of cool. You know, but I still want to keep people in control. I'm not into that whole doggone transhumanism. I don't want to be half robot. What about you? Did I lose you?
I can't get my... No, I couldn't get my mic off of... My mute off of mic or whatever. But, no, there's no way that I feel that I need to be changed. You know, I'm perfect for me the way I am. And, you know, there's people out there who might think it's a really cool idea to become more than. And that's good for you guys. You go ahead. But I'm me. And you know, I have a finite existence. So what? You know? That makes everything that I experience that much more precious, that much more important to me, that I experience it. So, I'm not for transhumanism either. But I was going to say, you want to take a quick song break
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm going to throw on Molly Hatchet, Flirting with Disaster. That's a good one.
Oh, there you go.
Because that's what mankind is basically doing, because we put all our doggone, you know, eggs in one basket when we trust our so-called leadership of the world. You know, these folks, they don't have our best interests at heart. And if they did, I think we'd have a lot of things that would be resolved already. Don't you think so?
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to see when we come back. I'm going to see if we can get Barry to join us, too.
Cool.
He doesn't think... You know, that's another thing, too, before we go to break real quick. A lot of people think, well, I have nothing to add to this because this is science and stuff. You know, how I am usually with you when you're talking about your science. I say, well, I don't have anything. But when we're talking about this, magnetics and energy, and now that I have this understanding, I know exactly what you're talking about now, Shaziz.
Well, yeah, but you've been a scientist since you was a kid, because you could tell me things about the natural sciences that I probably ain't got a clue about, and some of which I might have figured out along the way, but for the most part, you come from a heritage where you guys and gals know where there's different types of foods. You realize there's a lot of people out there don't even know how to forage. They don't even know what's edible in their neighborhood and what isn't. You know, and what's medicine?
That's because we always separated science from our natural world. We never saw it as part of who we are. So we kind of felt alienated. I mean, that's the way I did. I mean, science, that's mathematics, and that's experimentation. I got no clue on that stuff.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, mathematics is something they throw in there to muddy up the water, because when you start talking equation, even old crazy Shaziz gets a headache. So I just want to talk mechanically. I want everything to be as simply explainable to everybody, and there's Occam's razor, basically the simple solution is the big one. So folks, we're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be right back with hopefully some more genius. Peace and love. Stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science on ShazizRadio.com. If you're in the super chat and you want to go over and see the People for People crew, just scroll down, and there's a really cool banner ad. You can click on there and go visit with them. Tell them that crazy mad haired Shaziz guy sent you. Alright, stay tuned. Peace and love.
I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
I really love that because I'm always creating a ruckus. That's what we do here on Mad Science. We've been joined by Barry. Say hi, Barry.
Say hi, Barry.
There, he said hi, Barry. Patty's here as well. And I've been telling everybody that you don't have to think you're a scientist, but you're a scientist whether you think you're a scientist or not if you've actually been studying up nature. And some of which Barry's been studying up is different mushrooms that have health benefits. He's studied up different hemp products and actually made concrete out of hemp that's strong and fireproof and has all kinds of qualities. I'll get him started on that and we'll be there for the rest of the show. But hey, that makes you a scientist, brother. And Patty, she's been studying everything about nature since the day, all of us have, you know. And these supposed real scientists, the ones with the supposed piece of paper, the document, the sheepskin or whatever they call them, you know, when you graduate and you get your diploma or your big old degree or whatever. You know, I tell you what you really need is a degree from Mad Science from over here at ShazizRadio.com. Jump over there to Super Chat. And scroll down right up there. It's at the top of the deal, and it says attend the University of Mad Science. What you need to do is take that test. If you pass that test, print that out and keep it proudly on your wall that you're truly a mad scientist. Because we're gonna be the ones to get things done. What do you folks think?
What do you think, Patty? I think that right now, boy, we better get her done quick. That's all I can say. And I don't want to be a doomsayer, I never do, but I'm looking at reports every day, and this planet's in trouble, so we better get it done quick.
Well, yeah, it's time to clean the house!
We talked, you know, you talked the first part of the show there, Shadith, I talked, you know, how we, the whole planet, you know, we're a mechanism that interacts with itself and supports itself.
Yeah.
And will continue to flourish forever until along came man with chemicals, and now we see a planet that is in big trouble, and I don't know if Mother Nature can repair the damage that man has inflicted on this planet. That's a question I ask myself every day. Mother Nature is an amazing mechanism, but can she deal with the stuff that she's being exposed to now? That's a question. I don't think we should be asking ourselves.
Nature can, but the question is, do we have enough time to wait around for nature to be able to get such a messy job cleaned up? Because we should be assisting nature right now. We should be assisting nature in a major way. You know, there's all kinds of things. Like back during that BP oil spill, that shouldn't even have been gone down like that because there were thousands of people, including myself, who sent them all kinds of natural ways to fix that problem without throwing that doggone chemical Corexit in the water.
Yeah.
I told them it was going to come back bite them.
Nature could be, in my world, I'll just make one comment and then Patty, I'll let you tell it, but nature really can be summed up in one statement. The food chain. Period.
Well.
The whole planet depends on the rest of this planet to survive and support itself. And we now are taking major pieces out of that food chain. So my question, of course, is going to be how long can this biosphere that is so beautiful continue to maintain itself when we continually take out large pieces of the food chain? Go ahead, Patty.
Well, here's the key to what I see. As you know, we say the earth is being put upon, and yes, it is. But this isn't the first time, and this planet has the ability to heal itself. We're the ones who may be endangered here. Life will continue. It's been reset many times before. And here's the thing, is that if we go back, all the way back to the first writings on the walls, and on the rocks, to all of, we find that they knew what we're talking about today. They knew of the connections between the universe and everything within it. And they knew that it worked in tandem to produce life of all types. And this perfect system that I talk about so often, it doesn't take a scientist to realize that if you have a system this perfect, then the science that backs it up must be beyond the ability to produce energy from oil, to produce the things that we do produce. When we look at nature, and we see that the plants that grow are not only for our nutritional needs, but are healing at the same time. They have properties that directly interact with our bodies to produce healing within. Because, you know, when people say that this is a medicinal herb, it's not really. There is no medicinal herb out there. There are herbs with nutrients. And those nutrients, when taken into the body, are utilized in conjunction. Different compounds are created within the body to create the medicine. So the body is the actual pharmacist when it comes to it. The compounds that are found in herbs are only made up of nutrients, right? So that when they come into the body says, okay, I need this nutrient and I need this nutrient, and I'm going to combine it with this vitamin, this mineral, and it's going to produce the effect that I need. So it's not the plant that is the medicine, it's the body that utilizes. Just like science in the medical field decides that they can take this one compound and combine it with these others and make a pill that will give you relief, the body does it in perfect synchronicity without waste.
Isn't it ironic that nature does exactly what you're explaining the human body doing?
That's what I'm saying. This is not science that is beyond us. It's in our face. We are part of this science. We are part of what we're discussing today. And we're not apart from it. We are a part of it. You know, and that understanding, Shaziz, was my epiphany, my moment of clarity that made me see the whole picture and understand more what you were talking about. Because how many times, how many years have I told you, Shaziz, what you talk about is just over me, I don't understand it, da-da-da-da-da. Right?
Yeah.
I used to tell you that all the time. I know what you're talking about now because I found my relation to you through that, you know, to the universe, through what you were teaching and what I finally made the connection with. And it was like, boom, wow.
Well, that's because you paid attention in the school of life and you learned a lot of things, and all of us together, we complement one another with the things that we've learned. And that's why I say we're sitting here right now at a crossroads right now where we got access to amazing technology. And if we, the people, actually decide to use it and use it properly, all you got to do is watch nature. Nature will teach you how to do everything. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. You haven't paid attention because we're floating in it. And you know, there are people that will actually mock that statement. Oh, we're floating in free energy. They make it like it's a joke or something, but it ain't. They say the atmosphere that we're in right now, in your room that you're in, the atmosphere is moving at 900 miles an hour. All the little particles are flying back and forth. And even during the winter time when you're walking across the carpet with your bare socks and you build up electron and you touch somebody on the ear with shoot a lightning bolt out your finger. Isn't that not what nature's already been doing? And that energy can be stored. It can be used to get work done.
When you have that static charge, you know, like when you rub up against something and you then touch something metal and you get that little spark, that's your body doing the same thing our atmosphere is doing.
Yep.
It's finding a way to release that excess energy.
Yes, balancing itself out.
Right. We are the same. We're no different than our ecosphere here. We operate on the same exact principles. There's no difference. So if we can come to that understanding, then we can see that there's a relationship greater than any that science has given us. You know, that we are a part of. To me, that's the profound thing, is that we are energy. That's what we're saying, is that we are energy.
Yep. Imagine some crazy-haired guy named Shaziz rolls up onto the stage and says, hey, let's take the Van de Graaff generator, which has some really cool physics to it. Let's take the Wimshurst generator, which has similar physics but slightly different. And let's take all these things that we've learned about magnetism and induction and combine them all into one nifty little unit that will actually take the energy that's flowing around anyway and use it to get some work done. How many people you think going to take him up on that offer and try it?
Well, how many people took you up on that offer and tried it, Shaziz?
So far, me.
Yeah, but there seems to be, like I said, watching your videos and seeing the comments now, I see people are finally, like me, starting to get it.
I know, and I'm really loving every minute of it. I'm loving the fact that these folks, it's like a light bulb's coming on in their head, and they're like, holy smokes, that crazy old dude just did. I put something on the table, folks. It's going to be really awesome. I can't wait to share it with you. I got some custom-made parts on the way. I actually went out and printed that T-shirt that I've been talking about because I'm gonna wear that around. I'm probably wearing it in a lot of videos. It says "Mad Science is the key to free energy. Ask me why." And that's all I've been trying to get people is just ask me why. You know why it is I'm saying what I'm saying. The fact is, All this stuff that we've been talking about all these years are little pieces of the puzzle that make up the grand scheme of things. It's observations of what nature has already done, and if you take these observations and you think about what you've done in the past and how it's actually caused nature to be off balance, like the pond scenario that I talked about with the duckweed and the water mill, you know, there's solutions for every single issue under the sun. All we got to do is take up that knowledge and utilize it and help each other out. But I might make me a T-shirt on there, and I'll post a link again for everybody so that if you want to make your own. Mine cost me, I think it was like 20 or 30 bucks because I only ordered one of them. But I actually was thinking, contemplating on, you know, making them online and seeing, you know, if people wanted to buy them, but I don't know. I'm not a businessman, so I'll probably just post the picture out there. If you like it, make your own and have people, you know, help us out by coming to visit, you know, and maybe we get more dream teams going in more neighborhoods, plus the bucket campaign of bottle caps for science that I'm going to be doing, and I'm going to show people how to turn what would have otherwise been trash into a real solution. And it says that right on the sticker. It says, help us show you how to turn trash into a real solution. Because I'm going to take what nature's taught me, and I'm going to show people how every single thing, no matter what it is that's going into your trash can be reused for something useful, a useful purpose. Everybody think about, oh, wow. You know, that's garbage. No, it's not. If you take and break down the chemistry of what you just threw in the trash, man, you can produce methane from your trash. You can produce all kinds of different flammable gases from your trash. You can even produce gasoline from your trash. Not that we're going to need any of that, but nonetheless, it's still a fact. The plastics inside there, the papers inside there, when you throw them in the dump, nature's just going to break them down into its separate deals again anyway, and then turn around and you're going to go dig it up somewhere else and try to make the same product. Well, why not take that same material, separate it into all different types of, containment units? We could actually build a home disposal system that would separate your trash from everything from liquids to chemistry or whatever, all the way down to paper, plastics, and metals, and then put it into a little deal at the bottom that you could then take to your local recycling and get paid for. You know, they will actually pay you for these things when it's all said and done. Or you would have the same machine that would make out useful products out of the useful materials in there. Nothing gets wasted, just like nature wastes absolutely nothing. We make a mess by throwing all this trash in the dump, stinks up somebody's neighborhood, pollutes up somebody's waterways, when in fact all we had to do all along is be good caretakers and use that material properly. Every material out there, don't matter what it is, you can use too much and cause problems. But if you use this material properly, I'm going to show it. I'm going to fund my research with trash. I'm going to prove it. I don't just get on here and start talking out the side of my neck. If I put something out there on the table, it's there for a reason. And if I say I'm going to do it, it's going to get done. I guarantee you that. But I'll turn this bottle caps into something, and hopefully, most of all, I'll turn it into some forward momentum for the future generations to actually want to do something like recycling. What do you guys think?
I think we better get on it real quick, so that, because I don't know how much longer this planet will sustain life itself. I want to be negative. I don't want to come in here with a negative attitude. But one thing I do follow every day is reports. I just read reports on the incredible dialpha insects we're experiencing around the planet. Stuff you'd never hear about on mainstream. I read these reports every day, and I ask myself, how much longer does this planet have before we're going to see a breakdown in all our systems? Because they all, like you said, support each other. So we are in a situation right now where we are asking ourselves questions that we should never, ever be asking ourselves. That what we have done to this planet through chemicals, through nuclear power, through everything that we brought to bring comfort and joy in our lives in the last 100 years has absolutely put us into a situation where we could see the extinction of life on this planet. And I ask
Hi, everybody. Hello. How you doing, Barbara? Hi. Okay, doing good. Good subject, of course, because I've been watching the new Indian women on the new Congresswoman, Haland, I'm not quite sure what her name is, and of course, you know, they're talking on the climate change situation because, of course, the Indian people are very concerned about what's going on, and of course, they're being inundated with oil, you know, pipelines through their lands and so on. It's an ongoing issue, and dumping of radioactive waste on Indian land. I mean, it's But what I was realizing is they're all talking about global warming, you know, and they just are off track, in my estimation. Nobody's saying anything about the raping of the rainforests on a daily basis and what that does to the Earth's lungs, because the forests are the lungs of the Earth. And nobody's talking about the shipping across the oceans, that dump various things into the ocean. Nobody's talking about the dirty coal and taking down mountains, whole mountains for coal and the sludge and whatever the waste comes off of that and runs into the waters, into the, you know, people's waters, the aquifers, and so on. Nobody's talking about the pesticides. What I'm talking about are the corporations, of course. They're talking about your carbon footprint. They're talking about, you know, plastics, which is, all this is important, but no one is really identifying the main, the main stuff that's messing up the air, the water, and the earth. And we're all part of it. You know, I'm not blaming just fully them, because it's about the people. We are consumers, tremendous consumers. And the answer, I feel, really is that people just, the fingers are being pointed at various things that have nothing to do with consumerism. You know, people aren't getting that message. They're just going about their lives, continuing the same patterns, and yet complaining about global warming. And the fingers are being pointed in another direction. But I feel that our lifestyles, we're all part of this. And of course, we've been, you know, inundated with merchandises. We must buy this merchandise, or we must, you know, live, have this lifestyle. That's something that's been imprinted in us, but nobody puts the two and two together here. And I'm just wondering if people really started to wake up and change their lives and cut back on their consuming goods that is not really necessary. You know, yes, we need things, but I'm talking about the necessary things. And those that we don't really need, but that creates all this mess. So I'm looking at that, about how people are so sidetracked with the global warming thing, and they're missing what I feel is the main point. And we're really, if people continue to consume, okay, that keeps the corporations digging and blowing things up, and various other things, you know. Okay. So I'm just saying, that's what I'm starting out with here, because I just popped in, and it's good to be here with you guys. Thank you.
Well, when it comes down to global warming, I haven't witnessed it yet, but when it comes down to people trashing the joint, I've seen that on a daily basis. People drive down a road, throw their garbage out the window because they're too lazy to keep it or go recycle it or something like that. But what I'm trying to do here, folks, and I've been trying to do this for quite some time, somebody came out and they said that the world had a problem. Then they came out and they said the world had a whole bunch of problems. And then over the years, the problems kept on escalating. But I'm only one individual, and I got a lot of good ideas. But there's a lot of other people out there that have a lot of good ideas as well. Until we can get these environmentalists to the table to tell them how you could fix this, then they're just going to keep on saying what they're saying. I want the environmentalists to come here and talk with me. I want the governments to come and talk with me. You know, and I'm not saying I got all the answers to everything under the sun. I'm only one guy. But the thing about it is, I'm doing my part by trying to bring people to the table. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. That's what the Mad Science Show is all about, to try to inspire people to realize we've got solutions. They are everywhere. There's solutions to everything. And even to the extent of the disaster over there at the Fukushima plant, we could fix that too. I know how to fix it. I know how we could have fixed the oil spill without dumping Corexit down there. But nobody was listening. As loud as we shouted back in the day, there were people, there were at least 1,000 people that I know of that contacted these individuals and said, look, there's a natural solution. You don't got to use that chemical, which breaks it down and throws nature off of balance. All of what we do to throw nature off of balance is all of what we're going to have to deal with when nature bounces back. And nature will bounce back. And unfortunately, it might be with the extreme vengeance to where we're no longer part of the equation anymore. You know?
Well, you have numerous nuclear plants all over the world. Many of them are leaking and so on. You know, I mean, The point I feel is, I'm going to stick with the corporations, because the corporations will function as long as we keep giving them something to dig and blow up and, you know, usurp from the earth. The corporations will continue. So I don't care the environmentalists, the who's or whatsevers, coming to sit down at a table, you know, to me, the solution is the people have to stop consuming. We have to back down. We have to change our lifestyle. If we want to help this planet, we have to stop buying product that keeps these corporations in working. That's what I feel.
I agree.
I know there's all the solutions that you have. I totally agree with you. But I feel we cannot ignore that one piece, the people's consuming.
Keep the
mess going.
That's been driven into us since we were children. That's where life is. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to go to work, buy stuff, go to college, pay taxes, and buy it.
And so, get as much stuff as you possibly can. More.
There is a question in chat. Can we fix the radioactivity in the ocean?
Well, of course we can. We can fix it all.
So what are we going to do about that? How are we going to fix that?
The corporations who are dumping the radioactive, if you clean one area up, are they going to stop dumping? Are they going to stop fracking? Are they going to stop blowing up mountains? Are they only they will stop if the people stop consuming?
Well, you have to ask yourself the very first question of all. You know, it goes back to Galen Windsor's nuclear scare scam video. It's a really interesting video. Whatever people might think of it, it's a really interesting video. But first question you got to ask is, if all the leaders of the world don't recognize that there's an issue, then there could very well be possible that there is no issue. Now, if we're on the planet and they're human and we're human, then they're actually dying too. They're going to kill themselves off while trying to depopulate us. But nonetheless, if you can get somebody who's really serious about resolving the issue, we have every single technology available right now under the sun in order to resolve the issues. First off, we got the filtration where we can actually filter out the materials that are actually have radioactive qualities to them, and we know how to contain those properly. Plus, we know how to extract the energy from those. See, there's something about radioactive material that people don't understand. When they build them nuclear rods, those things, they only use 2% of the entire energy in there before they're considered to be depleted and no longer useful for boiling water at a certain temperature. However, there's still lots of energy left over. Now, that energy, if properly contained, could be used for thermoelectrics. According to NASA, they sent a probe all the way to Pluto, so far away from our planet that if you look back at the sun from that distance, the sun would be like just a little dot in the sky like you see when you go outside and you look. But it had enough energy after traveling through the deep dark space for 9 years to produce over 200 watts of power and send a radio signal all the way back, plus a picture of the planet down there, and give us a nifty little deal, a look at the deal. That's what NASA said they got. The government said they got. Alright, so if they have that right there, that's some technology that could be advanced upon to take all what would have been wasted material, put it in safe containment units to where it's no longer a danger of pressurizing and producing a hydrogen explosion because it doesn't boil water efficiently anymore. So this same material is still depleting and it's releasing its energy that then in turn can be stored in the form of heat energy that can then in turn be transferred over into electrical current to run all the inefficient junk that we run.
Right. What about existing radioactivity in the ocean right now?
We get it out.
How?
We got tons and tons of water filtration. We know what the mycelia.
You have the mycelia, the natural Mother Earth's mycelia, which is one of the most extraordinary healers of pollutions, like oil. Sludge of oil and various other things they've been using this, and I just want to say that I think that there are many solutions. I think that they are nature solutions and the genius of people. But I want to say that our system is so messed up because you have corporate lobbyists who are basically running our government. The lobbyists lobby for, you know, fracking, they lobby for coal, they lobby for drilling, and, you know, that's part of the system too, that is messed up. But we, the people, I'm still going to keep saying, you know, I live a very simple life. I'm not a consumer, you know, I'm a minimal consumer of things. I think my Jeep is like from 2009. You know, I have clothes that I've worn for ages, and I'm not saying I'm better than anyone, but I'm not driven by consumerism. It actually upsets me very much to see, you know, certain things that, you know, you see all these malls that are dead now in certain states, that they're just there, these monstrous malls. Now they're no longer used, and they all contain the same merchandise. You go from one mall to the other, and it's the same exact merchandise. And I think people are just driven by a need, a longing, something missing, and I think they're looking outside for merchandise that will give them a momentary high or a sense of something good. And it doesn't last, because that's not the answer. Meanwhile, they're hearing, you know, the disasters are happening here and there, and the global warming and so on and so forth, and that's going to, they'll get freaked out and upset and go out and shop to satisfy, you know, to get that little high, you know what I'm saying? I think there's a lot of stuff here that people aren't looking at, this desire to be fulfilled, and the media and whatever is telling them what will fulfill you is go out and buy this and you'll be happy. And they do, of course, you know, because they don't know where to find the answer. To me, the answer is, you know, on a scale that, you know, is a spiritual aspect of ourself, of finding that inner peace within ourself, so that you're not hungry. So nobody can basically, you know, control your mind and say you need to go out and spend the money and charge this and charge that so that you're in debt, and that you get depressed that you go out and buy more because you're in debt. It's a vicious cycle.
And you're supporting the corporations that are destroying the planet.
Exactly.
That's the bottom line.
Exactly.
It goes a little deeper than that.
Because
we look at this and we say those corporations, but those corporations don't exist unless we make it go. Yeah. We're the ones who are blowing up things. We're the ones who are raping the earth, because we're the ones who go out and get in the machines that do the damage. We're the ones who produce the chemicals that are toxified. So what we need is a human revolution. We need a new way of thought, a new way of doing things. And when we look at what Shaziz is talking about with this free energy, and it is free, I'm sorry, I don't care who says there's no such thing, you're not paying attention. Look at the earth. Look at how it produces life through free energy. It doesn't pay for anything. It doesn't exhaust itself to produce. It doesn't waste energy. This is the system that we are. We're that same system. And as soon as we decide that we can change this system, we can do this. So it's not that we don't have the ability. It's that we cannot let go of the convenience. We cannot let go of the tether that we have to the system. And that's the downfall. None of this would be happening if we were paying attention to how the universe works and how our part is played within it. We have the ability to change everything, you know?
Well, it's not going to be taxes, and it's not going to be any amount of money. It's the people that have, like you're saying, the people have to change. And, you know, taxing whatever's or money or whatever it is not going to solve this problem. It's a downward spiral until we put the brakes on and wake up and take responsibility. But they've given us someone responsible or something responsible. So everyone's focused on that, so they don't have to take responsibility.
Well, I'm trying to rally the troops. I'm trying to tell everybody out there that each as in an individual, you know, it takes more than one person to mess up a house. And it takes more than one person to clean up a house. Otherwise, it ain't anybody happy. So what we're here in our beautiful earth, and we're all doing our separate little things, where you put stuff really does make a difference. You start dumping all your used motor oil down your local creek, then your lakes and streams are going to be polluted up until nature's able to balance it back out. But what I'm trying to get at through this whole entire deal was we got the technology right now, and this is why I call it mad science, because it frustrates me to all get out that we have clean technologies. The governments keep hollering about we got to reduce our carbon footprint, but they never ever do anything to resolve it, no matter what. The Texans, somebody like Barbara said, ain't going to cut it. All right, it's going to take everybody coming together at the table and building dream teams in your own community to put all these solutions in action. I mean, I can sit here and tell you about free energy all day long, and you can look at me cross-eyed thinking I'm nuts because it doesn't match what the school book said. But if I show you a physical deal, then there's no denying it, all right? But nonetheless, until we get to that point to where everybody's utilizing these technologies, we're still going to have the same exact problems. With the whole entire Fukushima incident, that's the whole entire political, governmental red tape just to get anything accomplished, when the average Joe, if they knew what they were doing and they paid attention in science class, would already be over there cleaning the mess up. All right, it's that simple. If it's our planet, if it's our home, until we all get together and decide to clean house, we're going to live in a dump. Plain and simple. We don't have to live in a dump. And I'm trying everything I can under the sun between sharing whatever knowledge I've got in my mind and the information I come across and research and all the possibilities, all the solutions available, and I can put them out there. But if you're not sharing the ideas, and if you're not talking to your neighbors about it, or if you're not trying to get out there and be hands-on pulling those old car tires out of the ditch and recycling them properly, then we're all just talking. You know, but there's only so much that nature can take, and there's got to be come a time when we're going to have to pitch in, because nature needs our help. Otherwise, we're going to watch these species die off. We're going to watch everything continue to go downhill. The hard part isn't getting the job done. The hard part is uniting the people, because you've been told and indoctrinated for so long that it is not possible. You've been told all the doom and gloom. Stop listening to the man. Start listening to your hearts and minds and listen to nature. Nature's talking to you. Nature's pleading with you.
Well said. Well said, Shazuz.
I agree on that.
Well, folks, we're at the end of our time here on Mad Science. I kind of wish it could stay longer, but, you know, I got things to do. I got things to share with the world, and I'm sure y'all got lives to live, too. But if anything in this podcast or any other podcast, for that matter, inspires you, you don't even have to write me a letter and say, hey, can I use your show? No, copy it. Use it whatever you want. You know, the t-shirt that I talk about there that I'm trying to share out there, I actually had me one made, you know. It says, Mad Science is the key to the truth about free energy. Ask me why. I would love to wear that into the House of Congress and have them ask me why. Because they would be there for a long speech. A long in-depth speech. I would be giving them a full, complete, and utter science class, and there would be testing afterwards. What have you done, Mr. Congressman, Mr. Senator, to resolve this issue that you keep talking about taxing us for and taking us out of our cars and our airplanes or whatever? We can make those airplanes fly cleanly. We can make those cars run cleanly. We have the technology to do so. So what we're going to do about that is what the people decide they want done about that. It's as simple as that. So I want to do a Knights of the Round Table thing and let you guys say something real quick before we go. Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll go first. I just stepped in briefly, and I'm glad to be here, of course, always, and hear the, you know, your perspective on things and the passion that you have, and I think we're all there with you. And I just want to say It is not hopeless, and we're not helpless, but we do have to step up to the plate and begin to work together. You know, we have to wake up and know that we can do something, and it's available for us, and we have to stop believing in the system and the mess that I guess I'd say the system has brought us into. But as participants, we must take responsibility. I just want to say that, and thank you. Never mind.
Thank you, Barbara.
Ladies before gentlemen, ladies.
Well, I just want to say that if you're waiting for science and for the authority to make the change, it's not going to happen. It won't ever happen. We have to be the change. We have to be the science. And we have everything we need. We have what we need. Nature has provided everything. The universe provides everything. And when we look at science today and we see what we have and we marvel at the technology we produce, this is child's play. This is kindergarten stuff. This is anti-science when it comes down to it, because those planes up in the air and those cars and those trains and all of these things that we've created that we think we've done such a good job at, they don't even hold a candle to what we can create through the science of the universe, through the science that the earth has shown us. What we create from this point on is our responsibility. We have to go out there and start talking to people and tell them there is a solution, and it won't cost you an arm and a leg, and you do have the ability to make this change in your life. And once you do it in your life, then other people can make it in their life. This is the only way we can do it. And we have to do it this way. There's not going to be a change unless we bring the change. This authority, this system that is set up, has been done purposely. Purposely. There is no mistakes. There are no errors in authority and in the science that they put out as far as they're concerned, because they're leading us. Now it's time for us to lead science and become the authority. Just saying.
You're
love
right.
To each know.
Hey, you know something? I got a dustpan and I got a broom, and there's a little symbol on the side of that, and it said made out of recycled materials. So I'm cleaning up my trash in my house with my trash. So my intention is to show the world how to clean the world with their trash. Sorry, go ahead, Barry.
Well, it all makes sense. But you know what? It's not hopeless, folks. It's not hopeless. But we are getting to a point, I believe, that the window of opportunity for us to ensure that there will be life on this planet in the future, that window is not closing, but it is starting to close. And I urge people to really look into everything you can do to offset what we're doing to this planet, become responsible to the future of this planet and to your children and to the continuance of life on this planet. What else is more important? We're all here for the same reason. We all see the problems. And like I said, I don't ever want to be labeled as a doomsdayer, but I do follow events around the world every day. It's one of the things that I spend a lot of my time on. And when I see these reports, I try and vet them to make sure the information is correct and it's accurate. And unfortunately, most of it is. And that being said, that we are pushing a kind of an envelope right now that we shouldn't be pushing, that we've introduced so many chemicals and pollutants into our atmosphere, into our planet. Over the last 100 years, I will say, of the start of the Industrial Revolution, along came all these great new things that really now we look back and we haven't progressed, we have regressed. We have put ourselves in a situation where we could actually say to ourselves that we're going to experience death of life on this planet. And that's not a far-fetched statement, and I honestly believe that we are getting close to that point in the near future. And I don't want to wish that on my children or anybody coming forward in this planet in the future. Then we can make the changes, we have the answers. So I urge everybody to please tune in. Listen to what Jesus is saying.
Well, I agree, Barry.
Because the man is full of it. is bad at all. We all got it. We, between the people that sit in here, we have the solutions to so many of the problems. And like Shazia said, I can get on the hemp and I could talk for an hour. There is something that we could all embrace in a big time manner and make monumental changes to the biosphere and to the planet. So we need to do this before it's too late, guys. Thanks for having me, Shazia.
I want to say one more thing.
Go ahead.
If I could. Everybody listening right now, if you could do one thing, and that would be to go to Shaziz's YouTube channel, Shaziz, S-H-A-Z-I-Z-Z, and just go to his channel and look at his experiments and what he's doing with the neodymium magnet accelerator. It will show you how simple it is to create your free energy.
Yeah.
And if we could just make this go viral, take that video and splatter it everywhere. If people see this, then it might click that we do have an option outside of this system that controls us. And that's, you know, that's a beginning. That's a beginning. And all we got to do is just, you know, share Shaziz's channel, share his podcast, because it is important, and Shaziz is right in what he's doing. It's awesome, it's wonderful, and it's what we can promote in a positive way. So I just wanted to put that out there. Shaziz on YouTube, please go check it out.
Thank you very much for that, Patty. And like you, Barry, I feel like there's an urgency going on. It's not just the environmental window that's closing on us. It's the technology window that's closing on us. It's knowledge that we have access to right now. They're trying to suppress it. They're trying to shut down these radio shows and different alternative views and stuff like that. They actually are physically suppressing people's information. We got to stop that as well. And the only way we're going to do this is if you guys and gals out there, you download this information, pass it on to your friends. Let them hear what we're talking about, because there are definitely, without a doubt, solutions. I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to keep on doing until it's all over. I'm not going to give up. But I do this out of love of my family and my grandchildren and your grandchildren and to the infinity and beyond, because I still believe in the dream. So if you share these podcasts, you help us out. You know, and I hope to bring you some really good stuff real soon. And that's about the best I can do for you, because I'm just one person. But together, all of us, we make the dream team. Peace and love, everybody. Take care. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop. He's got a laptop.
I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
There it is.
He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch